All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And it is Monday. That means my dad is going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we got the Monday morning movie reviews coming up as well. Steve and Eric are going to join me to talk about the new movies, and we'll talk about box office as well. We're also going to talk about movies that have great endings and much more. We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way is to stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcasts. Our podcasts, lots of people listen to our podcasts, and we're happy about that. It's easy. It's free. You can subscribe, and they will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro, to our podcasts right there. All right. Tom Hush is again off this morning. He'll be back tomorrow, so filling in is Ben. Ben, how are you?
Pretty good, Nick.
Yeah?
Yeah. Nice Sunday. I mean, well, minus a Bears loss, but...
Yeah, Hawks lost, too.
Yeah.
But we'll hear the Blackhawks Express after my dad's joke a little bit later on. So, but yeah, Bears, what are they, 3-3 now, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see what happens. in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, Nick.
How are you, buddy?
All right. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm okay. Did you watch the Bears?
No, I slept. I usually sleep on Sundays to prepare for coming into here, but it's on DVR.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, so I'll go home and watch that and cry into my beer, and I'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and the Hawks lost too.
Yeah, I saw. Yep.
That's not fun. Not a great weekend for the sports here in Chicago.
No.
It's
trending downward for the Bears from what I can see.
Yeah, 3-3 now.
3-3. Now they've got the 2-5 Chargers coming to town. I almost said San Diego. Yeah, so we'll see.
So that's, is it a Sunday game?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So the next game will be on Sunday?
Next Sunday, yep.
Okay.
At Soldier Field.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Packers won. Jeannie let me know,
so there you go. Does she always let you know when the Packers win?
Oh, yeah. She's very concerned that I know what the Packers record is.
Very concerned is what she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that must be fun. And she's a Brewers fan, too.
Yeah, it's a joy. I take the good with the bad.
Well, that's always, there's a little fun in that.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. There is. Of course. It's just a game, and so we have fun with it.
Yeah.
Although... That's a little annoying.
Yeah, the Packers stuff is a little bit. I can imagine if you're a Bears fan that's not That's not too much fun. So we got a whole bunch of stuff coming up here on the show, and lots of movies to review, which we're going to do with Eric and Steve, and then we've got the box office, and we're going to talk about great movie endings. Which I was talking to Lisa and Roger about just a few minutes ago, and I always the first one that pops into my head, like I said before, is Planet of the Apes, because I remember the first time I saw Planet of the Apes when I was just a kid, the ending just freaked me out. I didn't. I mean, it was just. I remember it just being really, really freaky. But those movies are great. The old Planet of the Apes movies. Those are like. I remember when they used to do on the Channel 7 movie of the movie. They used to do the Channel 7 movie at. They did. It used to be the 3:30 movie, and it was on right before the 5 o'clock. You know, so it was like the 3:30 movie every day. Weekdays on Channel 7 would be the 3:30 movie, and then it, you know, would be on from 3:30 to 5. The problem was that they would do Ape Week because there were five. There were five Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes series. There were five films, so they would do Ape Week every once in a while. But the problem was that, you know, there's only 90 minutes for each movie, so it would be 3:30 to 5. And the problem was that they would cram in a bunch of commercials too. So, you know, like the first Planet of the Apes movie is over 2 hours long. So they would cut. I mean, they would just cut the hell out of these movies so that they could squeeze them into a 90-minute format. And then they would cut them even more because they would have to do commercials. So whenever there was Ape Week, you got to see like, I mean, you got to see like half the movie because they would just cut the hell out of it. And I never really understood the 3:30 movie. It just seemed weird to me. Here's you know, 3:30 in the afternoon. Here's a movie. We have a 90-minute time period, and so we're also going to cut. So you get to see like an hour of a movie, like every day. But I'd watch them, especially during Ape Week. I remember when they re-released the Planet of the Apes movies constantly. They were out like in the 70s. They were in the theaters all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember they released all five of them into the movie theaters, and it was just called Go Ape. And they had one of the apes pointing at you, and it just says Go Ape. And I'll never forget it because all five of them would be playing in theaters. And those are classic movies. Did you when you were a kid? Did you watch the Planet of the Apes movies?
Oh yeah, I was blown away. Like same thing when that ending happened.
Yeah,
that, in my mind, that was just too cool. Like as far as something that you were not expecting.
Yeah, yeah. It was just. I mean, you know, just. But the first Planet of the Apes movie. I mean, I like them all, but the first one is just like a legendary. It's just a classic. Yeah. It's one of the best science fiction movies ever made, and obviously it. You know, it spawned a bunch of sequels, and then there was a TV series.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Planet of the Apes TV series, which was not very good. And as the movies went on, as the sequels went on, the budgets got smaller and smaller, mm-hmm. and so the makeup got worse. So you know, like that really cool makeup in the first movie, where if I'm not mistaken, I think it won the makeup effects won an Academy Award. For the first Planet of the Apes movie, and then, but as you get on in time, you know they just started to slim down the budget, mm-hmm. and it's just guys with masks on at some point, and they just weren't, you know, the budgets weren't very good. But I still love all the movies. My second favorite, the first one is obviously the best. My second mm-hmm. favorite is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, which is the third one.
Yeah.
Third one or fourth one? Third one.
Third one.
Because it goes Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes. No. Battle. Oh, wait. Escape from the Planet of the Apes. That's the third mm-hmm. one. The fourth one is Conquest.
Yeah. Okay.
Conquest is the fourth one. Yeah. And that's the one where it's like a role reversal of the original, where like the apes are being, mm-hmm. Instead of like in the original movie, it's the humans are chained up and used as slaves. So they do a role reversal in Conquest, where it takes place in the future, 1991. That's another thing that I love. I love movies that now, you know, like when you see movies that are supposed to take place in the future, you know, and then the future is, you know, like for instance, I've mentioned this before, the 2019, this is the year that Blade Runner takes place.
Yeah.
And we don't have flying cars. No, I'm not hanging out with replicants. But I love when movies take place in the future, you know.
I've got a fun Planet of the Apes trivia for you.
Okay.
First Mad Magazine I ever got was the issue where it was Planet of the Apes, where they redid it Mad Magazine style.
Ah, there you go.
First issue I ever got.
I bet our old friend, my guess is our old friend who's been on the show several times, Dick DiBartolo, probably had something to do with writing that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, you know, Dick DiBartolo. All right, he's the man. All right, well, listen, Planet of the Apes rules. We all love it. And we are going to take a break here, and we'll talk with Eric and Steve. We got the new movie reviews to review here. We also have our box office to take a look at, and my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We got a Black Hawks Express to play back, and we're going to talk about movies with great endings. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is a Monday morning, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke. We also have the Monday morning movie reviews, which we're about to jump into. We are also going to talk about some of the best movie endings of all time and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. For talk and text, 312-981-7200. Monday morning movie reviews. Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me every week to talk about the movie reviews, and then we'll talk about the box office as well. So let's get the guys in. Steve, welcome back.
Good morning.
And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. All right, guys. Let's get into it. So, Steve, tell us about the Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Ah, yes, the long-awaited. Okay, so written and directed by none other than Kevin Smith, Jay and Silent Bob reboot stars Smith and Jason Mewes coming back as the sex-starved stoners that we met 25 years ago in Clerks, and we've seen them throughout the years in supporting roles and starring roles in Mallrats and Chasing Amy, Dogma, Clerks 2, and most relevant to this film, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. This is sort of a direct follow-up to that, although it's like 13 years later. In that movie, they went on a road trip to Hollywood to stop a movie from being made about characters based on them, Blunt Man and Chronic. And now someone is trying to reboot the characters in a new version of Blunt Man and Chronic. And so they hit the road once again to rehash old jokes and visit old friends and stop another movie from being made. This one directed by, ironically, Kevin Smith. So, having survived a heart attack since his last film, Smith has definitely sort of different themes in mind this time, and including very strong feelings about family. He casts his daughter again, Harley Quinn Smith, as Jay's love child with Shannon Elizabeth's character from Strike Back. He never knew he had a love child until this movie, but she does end up accompanying them on their journey to Hollywood because she and a friend want to attend a Blunt Man and Chronic convention known as Chronicon that is going on, and hopefully win a role or a walk-on role in the new Blunt Man and Chronic movie. As I mentioned, we've revisited some old pals, including Matt Damon, who is sort of in an unexpected role, and Jason Lee, Jason Biggs, James Vanderbeek, Rosario Dawson, some new friends like Chris Hemsworth and Kate Micucci, and so many others. The jokes kind of fly fast and furious. Some of them land, some of them connect like a wet fart in the wind, and most of them have to do with how this film is deliberately trying to lift elements of Strike Back so blatantly that we're supposed to think it's by design instead of just because it was an easy way to go. The movie is in theory supposed to be making fun of reboots, but it I think maybe not on purpose every time falls into some of those pitfalls that a lot of reboots do. The Chronicon stuff is actually takes the story in a new direction away from the Strike Back storyline, and so some of that stuff actually is a little bit funnier and a little bit better, and it includes a really nice extended monologue by Ben Affleck who Smith had a falling out with a while back, and they sort of patched things up just in time to make this movie. It deals with sort of the hazards and joys of getting older and growing up and taking on the responsibility of being a parent. And he also manages to slip in a few pretty funny Batman jokes. Look, I mean, Kevin Smith has his diehard fans without a doubt, and I have no doubt they're going to love eat up every minute of this thing. There are some cameos I haven't even mentioned, and some of them are pretty inspired. Some of them are so in-jokey that to the View Askew universe that I think like 10 people in the whole world are even going to get them. I wouldn't say I loved it, but it certainly amused me to a certain degree. I will say that Kevin Smith playing himself might be one of the more taxing experiences I've ever had in one of his movies. I think I'm more looking forward to the Clerks 3 movie that he said he's making now, because I like the Clerks movies more than the Jay and Silent Bob film. So it is interesting to see Smith sort of showing signs of maturing in his filmmaking. I'm not necessarily sure that's a good thing for his comedies. But I have sort of enjoyed some of the more serious things he's done over the years, so maybe we'll see some of that down the line. But this feels like a little bit of a step back. It feels like an easy path to travel for him. But at the same time, there's two sold-out shows of this thing at the Music Box tomorrow because Smith and Muse are going to be there, so... You know, what the hell do I know? It's certainly not his best or funniest effort, but I hate to use the phrase fan service, but that's kind of what it feels like. So,
I haven't seen it, but I mean, that's what it feels like to me, and I haven't even seen it.
And it will. I don't know where all it's open. It actually is playing Midnights at the Music Box next weekend, so you will have a chance to see it. And at some point, I don't know if it's opening in other theaters. I'm not sure what the path is here, but. Look, if you want to see it already, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I think you can figure that out. I think that goes without saying. Okay. All right. That's Jay and Silent Bob reboot. All right. Eric, tell us about Zombieland 2 Double Tap.
Well, speaking of sequels that come a decade later, this is the sequel to the enormously enjoyable and quite successful Zombieland from 2009. Ruben Fleischer, the film's original director, is back, and he's brought back the original cast: Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, Emma Stone, and Abigail Breslin. And it's set 10 years after the previous movie. The gang is the sort of makeshift family is still together fighting zombies that have evolved a bit over time, taking sort of a cue from the George Romero days. That there are different types of zombies now. Some have gotten dumber. Some have actually gained in power and strength. And they're holed up at the beginning of the movie in the White House, because why not, I guess, and doing about their normal routines. Then they meet some new people along the way because Abigail Breslin's character wants to basically, explore a bit more. She's past her teenage years now, and actually wants to hang out with people her own age. She ends up on a road trip with a stoner hippie named Berkeley. And the gang, is not set to hold up at the White House forever. Want to go find her, and that puts them out on a journey, and they meet a really ditzy blonde, played by Zoe Deutsch, as well as taking a cue from Shaun of the Dead and meeting some doppelgangers along the way, played by Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch. So there's the basic plot for the sequel 10 years later.
All right, hang on. Eric, hang on. We'll take a quick break here. And Steve and Eric... you guys hang on, and we'll come back, and we'll find out what Eric thought of Zombieland Double Tap and what we thought of it and all everybody else. So that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN, and we shall return right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. It's Monday. That's why it's jokey time. And we also have the Monday morning movie reviews that we are doing right now. We're going to talk about best movie endings of all time, and we'll tackle the box office as well. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, let's get the guys back on. Here's Steve. Welcome back.
Hello.
And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, you were telling us about Zombieland Double Tap.
Yeah, and, you know, go back 10 years when we reviewed the original on the show. I still remember walking out of that screening for Zombieland, really on, you know, a bit of a high. Just, you know, it was 80-some minutes of just pure joy, really funny, really sort of original take on the zombie genre. Really before we have sort of been inundated with zombie film after zombie film, this was still in a period where a movie like this could still be considered a bit fresh and original. And I remember I said to someone walking out of that screening that I would watch a sequel to this movie right now. And they made me wait 10 years for it. And, you know, as much as I enjoyed that original film, you know, I've sort of cooled on the idea of needing a sequel. And I think this film gets off to a bit of a rough start. Like a lot of sequels, it feels like, you know, this is kind of a criticism for the entire movie, that it feels like it needs to repeat the jokes and things that, speaking of fan service, that fans of the original really like. So it's a safe way, it's a safe road to travel down, to give everyone the exact same stuff. Hey, remember this? We're going to do this joke again, and you laugh, so please laugh again. And the first 15, 20 minutes or so, as they're sort of settled in at the White House, which really, they kind of missed the opportunity to really go for some really pointed jokes, you know, but they did that for a reason and didn't really quite take advantage of it. The characters themselves, the way that they interact, it's almost like they reset the characters to the beginning of Zombieland when they first met, and they haven't, after 10 years, have evolved the way they did at the end of the first movie into this sort of this makeshift family, that two people fell in love, one of them was sort of this weird father figure to all of them, and there's this mutual respect and, you know, even love between these characters. And here they're just, you know, doing the same old shtick. They're all just kind of getting on their nerves. And, you know, Jesse Eisenberg's doing the awkward thing. Emma Stone's doing the distant thing. Abigail Breslin wants to, you know, be tougher than she actually is. And Woody Harrelson is just being kind of a jerk to everyone. But then a wonderful thing happens along the way. And her name is Zoe Deutsch. And she enters this movie, and I don't think there's a moment she's on screen where she does something where I didn't smile, laugh out loud, or laugh out loud hysterically. I think every time she winked in this movie, I laughed heartily. The way that, you know, I don't want to spoil too much, but the way they kind of weave her, you know, back into the story and stuff, I wish there was more of her. But everything she does is a pure delight. I did like, as much as when I first saw the trailer and saw that they're basically doing the Shaun of the Dead joke with Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch, I actually enjoyed their section of the film. I thought that there were some laughs to be had there, particularly the Middleditch and Eisenberg playing off each other, I thought was really fun. So I liked, you know, bits and stuff like that. And then it kind of leads to, you know, a similar type finale where everyone's holed up and all the zombies are going to attack and whatnot, but not quite as creative as the amusement park finale of the original one. So to me, the whole thing is kind of a mixed bag. I'm not entirely down on it. The more I sort of thought about it, sort of measuring just how much fun I had with the original compared to what I had with this one, I'm really just kind of on the fence about the whole thing, but I would absolutely recommend it to anyone who wants to experience what Zoe Deutsch brings to this movie, because it is so great that I would recommend it purely on her performance alone. But, you know, for people who really love the original, I would say you know, maybe wait until it's on cable and it'll be a nice distraction. I wouldn't exactly pay full price for it. It's just kind of okay.
All right. Steve, what do you think?
I liked it more than Eric, but he's absolutely right. The retread stuff is just there. It's sort of there, I think, and it's a little bit necessary because it has been 10 years, and we have to remember, the first film came out before The Walking Dead TV show, so we weren't quite as inundated with zombies as we are now, but we had to kind of remind us what the rules are again in this particular zombie world. So, but he's right, but that stuff is less interesting than the new stuff, the new characters. Zoe Deutsch is very funny, the dumb blonde jokes don't always land, but Deutsch sort of hints that there's a little something more knowing going on behind those vacant eyes, so I liked her a great deal. He didn't even mention my personal favorite new character is one called Nevada, played by Rosario Dawson, who owns an Elvis museum, which immediately endears her to Woody Harrelson's character, and I love the interaction that they have. I love when they bring in the two doppelganger characters. There's a fight sequence in the museum that kind of levels the museum that it looks like it's done in one take, and it's phenomenal. It's like the best action scene in the whole film. But the bottom line is, you know, like I laughed a lot during Double Tap. And you know, like I said, the zombie stuff and the apocalypse and all that isn't really the point of this. It was more about the interactions that these four people have when somebody else tries to sort of infiltrate their group. And I think Dawson adds a tremendous amount to it. And she's a really great counterpoint to Woody Harrelson's sort of bravado. Which honestly, like Woody Harrelson's character and his outlook on life feels a little dated 10 years later, and probably needs a little updating. But it's sort of fun to watch him take down woke culture in a certain way. We should also mention you definitely should stick around through the very end of the credits if you want a reminder of one of the best elements of the first film. I'm going to make sure nobody leaves before that. So yeah, I mean, look, it's sequels don't always give us new and improved, and more often they're about being cinematic comfort food. And I found this meal largely satisfying. So
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. You know, I love the first movie, and this was just kind of more of the same. But as you said, Eric, Zoe Deutsch steals this thing. She owns the movie. I mean, it's all her. I like this cast. I like the camaraderie between them and what happens between them. They really work well together. But man, she just comes in. Zoe Deutsch just comes in, like, and just steals it. So I mean, you know, if you like the first movie, you're just basically getting more of what you got in the first movie, and it just took them 10 years to put it together, which is just strange to me, but it works, you know. The Rosario Dawson again, as you mentioned, Steve, she's great. She's a terrific addition to the cast. She's really good in it. The doppelganger stuff is very funny. It is what it is. If you like the first Zombieland, you're going to get more of this, more of it. And there's some really great stuff. And again, yes, stay for everything, the full credits afterwards and all of that stuff, because you get it's a nice payoff. But again, as much fun as this movie is, I got to say, man, Zoe Deutsch, man, she's so hilarious. She's just great. So,
and I will say that if you stay through the end credits, you will see a better short movie than the entirety of The Dead Don't Die.
All right. Okay. We'll agree to disagree on that one. All right. You guys hang on a second, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Steve Procopi and Eric Childress here. We got more movies to review, and we'll do that when we get back right here on 720 WGN. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live on a Monday morning here. My dad is going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning. We're going to talk about the best movie endings of all time and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, C. Procopi and Eric Childress join me every Monday morning to review the movies. Let's get the guys back. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you.
Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Steve, you're the only one that went to see the old Maleficent.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us all about it?
Oh, boy. Okay, well, I honestly, I mean, I know we were talking about how it's been 10 years since Zombieland, but I can't actually believe it's been 5 years since the first Maleficent. It doesn't seem that long ago, but it's been 5 years and since Maleficent came into our lives and just absolutely set the record straight on just how the Sleeping Beauty legend really played out, thus giving Disney the excuse to cast Angelina Jolie in as a slinky sorceress or whatever the hell Maleficent's supposed to be. But now we've made our way through this alternative look at this beloved story, and now we get Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, that brings us an entirely new story of warring kingdoms and a wedding and a unexpected enemy that isn't really that unexpected, and the young Aurora, played by Elle Fanning, sort of caught between the worlds of humans and that of the fairies, which is run by her loving godmother, who just happens to be also the realm's most feared entity. So a few points to start with. Mistress of Evil is a beautiful looking movie, and I'm sure it costs a small fortune, but every penny is definitely up there on the screen. And even when I was usually bored by the subpar textbook fantasy storyline, the visuals kept me engaged to a certain degree. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what I was looking at when these little three fairy sisters played by Juno Temple, Imelda Staunton, and Leslie Manville show up. I'm not sure what they're supposed to be or how they did that, but I was mesmerized by it. They were in the first film, too. But there's also dozens of other sort of woodland creatures that are really a treat for the eyes and like I said, kept me mildly interested. And even more so than the first film, Maleficent is just downright sexy, a point made abundantly clear by Jolie as she sort of cycles through more costume changes than Cher in Vegas. And and there are and these aren't button-up, dignified outfits. There's skin showing. There's someone went shopping in the sexy Maleficent costume aisle at the pop-up Halloween store. And I'm in no way complaining, but man, parents need to be aware that their children, male or female, might actually go through puberty during this movie. The plot of Mistress of Evil feels arbitrary. Prince Philip is now played by a different actor. Harris Dickinson has decided he wants to marry Aurora. Maleficent is against it. His parents are willing to give it a try, and they invite Aurora and Maleficent over for dinner. His parents are played by Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert Lindsay, and of course, this dinner explodes into a huge scuffle, and something happens, and the king lapses into a coma, and the queen blames Maleficent for his condition. So it forces Maleficent to flee the entire country, and she's wounded and left for dead. But she's discovered by a winged, horned creature, just like herself, who's played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. And she quickly learns that there's an entire civilization of creatures like her that's been hidden from human view for hundreds of years, and all roads kind of lead to this massive battle between these two worlds, fueled by misinformation spread by Michelle Pfeiffer's character about a threat that these sort of fantastical creatures pose to humans. She happens to have a hidden lab under her castle that is devoted to basically creating chemical weapons that are only deadly to these fairy creatures, and she wants them all dead. Yes, this is actually a PG-rated children's film about genocide. I will make that very clear. The film is directed by Joaquin Roning, who did the Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales. Was that the last one, or was there one after that? I can't even remember.
I have no idea.
Yeah. But anyway, he did one of them, and one of the, well, yeah, anyway. So But I think the film's greatest crime is that it gets so lost in the fantasy elements that it forgets to create engaging characters or a story that generates any real drama. And if you can't make if you can't squeeze drama out of a genocidal tale, there's a real issue there. So, but considering how little I remember about the first film, I do recall that one of its strengths was that Jolie and Fanning had a real interesting dynamic, most of which is totally ignored in this film because they're hardly ever on screen together. That being said, Mistress of Evil is the better of the two films, I will say that, for what that's worth. And again, based largely on the creativity and the artistry on display and less about the very basics of good storytelling. I don't usually recommend a film just based on its spectacle value. I'm probably closer on this than I would be with another film, but take that for what it's worth, but I still am not recommending it.
Okay. All right. There you go. Maleficent. And we'll talk about the box office that it did a little bit later on. All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Let's talk about let's talk about Parasite.
All right.
Let's not talk too much about it, though.
Right.
As we know.
Yes, I was going to preface this by saying that, you know, we did talk about this a little bit from Toronto, and the people who are listening now are going to know a little bit more about the movie than even I did going in, because I literally went into the screening knowing nothing about it that other than it was directed by Bong Joon-ho, and that was enough, clearly. What the people want to know what the basis of the film is about, it is about family of four living in Korea, sort of a, you know, basically a low-income kind of freeloader type family. They're the kind of type of family that steals Wi-Fi from next apartment. They look for you know free food wherever they possibly can. The mom and dad and the two teenage son and daughter. The son has a friend who is tutoring a young girl in a wealthier family, at least. And he is going to go away, and he asks the teenage son of the family if he will basically take over, pretend to be a tutor. And that way you can sort of keep, his standing and make a little couple of bucks for the family. So the son basically pretends to be a tutor. He ingratiates himself into the family, and sooner than later, he starts bringing more people from his family into the relationship with this family. And that's really about all you really want to know going into this movie.
Yeah.
So right. We'll leave the plot right there.
Okay. Well, you guys hang on, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. We'll talk more about Parasite. We're going to take a break here. We don't want to give too much away. This is one of those movies that the less you know about it, the more effective it's going to be. But we've got a lot to talk about with this movie. It's called Parasite, and Steve and Eric and I will review it right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on 720 WGN. Monday morning, that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We're here till 5 a.m. The opening bell is at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And it's Monday morning movie reviews. We're going to do the box office as well. Let's welcome Steve and Eric back. Steve, welcome back.
Hello.
And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric. We talked a little bit about the plot for this movie called Parasite.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what did you think?
Well, I certainly don't want to bury the lead for everyone here, but this is absolutely one of the best movies of the year. I think I said when we talked about this at Toronto that I'm always really fascinated with movies that tackle elements and issues between the classes, particularly the upper and lower classes. I think that's a minefield of really interesting things that you can talk about there. In fact, just before we leave on the air tonight, I was actually just rewatching David Mamet's The Spanish Prisoner, which I think is kind of a underappreciated movie about class structure. It's a movie that kind of gets that element of it kind of gets lost given the sort of Hitchcockian labyrinth of plot that, that movie puts you through. But in some ways, I think it's kind of an apt comparison to Parasite in a way, because this movie certainly puts you through a number of twists and turns as well, to the point that even though the class stuff is very much at the forefront, it's very easy, you just get overwhelmed sometimes by the ride that you're being put on. But, you know, make no mistake, this is absolutely a movie about the classes. And Bong Joon-ho has done some remarkable movies about that very subject. Most people have, you know, have probably seen Snowpiercer, which you don't get much more obvious and blatant in taking a genre picture that is all about, you know, the poor live in the back car and the rich live in the front car. That's, you know, that's exactly how our society is structured. And, you know, seeing, you know, this is a movie where, you know, the lower class family, in many ways, are sort of our heroes in a way. But you know, even though we watch them doing some very, you know, horrible things at times, there's deception and lying and things. Not that, you know, we're going to feel too sorry for the rich people who are so aloof that they cannot even be bothered to do background checks on who these people coming into their homes are, as long as they're treating their, you know, their kids well and they're advancing their standings in the world. But you know, this is a movie where, you know, you can actually, you know, ascribe blame to both sides of these people, and you know where it eventually takes us in such crazy ways. Again, you don't even want to hint at some of the directions that this movie takes you to, because it's just going to shock and surprise. And yet, many times, this is an incredibly funny movie. You know, there's slapstick humor in here, even when it gets a little bit horrific at times, and leads us up to an ending that, well, again, you don't want to say too much about it. But this is a movie that is going to linger with people who see it. It's clearly doing incredible business in limited release right now in the box office. And when people see this movie, they'll be forced to talk about it. They'll be forced to talk about what they've just seen and what they think it all is supposed to mean and who exactly they're siding with when they come out of the theater. But yeah, this is absolutely one of the best films of the year, and the demands to be seen, particularly if you can see it with an audience who knows about it as little about it as you do.
Yeah. All right, Steve, what do you think?
I think it's a candidate for the best movie of the year, as far as I'm concerned. What's really fascinating about it, I mean, at least especially in the first half, is that the way that the two families are portrayed, the poor family is not presented as bad people. They are con artists of a sort. They're master manipulators, but all they're really doing is trying to all be employed and make money and like get out of these sort of dregs that they live in. They're not doing anything bad once they get into these positions in this household. And the rich family is not portrayed as bad or, you know, like, or anything like that. They're actually, they seem like a pretty nice family. And it's interesting that the title of the film gives maybe more away than anything that, you know, who is the parasite and who is the host. And you kind of think, you know, for a while. And then there are elements introduced much later that sort of change the whole dynamic. But, like, and Eric said, it's like a smart, sharp send up of classism, of consumerism. And it kind of says to us that if the rich aren't going to share with those less fortunate might just take them and take what they need. And I'm sure that's an idea that is very scary and alarming to a certain segment of the population. And yeah, I mean, and on top of that, like the art direction, the cinematography are all beyond impressive. And obviously the cast is flawless. And look, this is the winner of the Palme d'Or at Cannes. It's South Korea's submission for best, whatever the new category is called, international feature Oscar at the Academy Awards. Like I said, it might be the best film of the year. And if you somehow still manage to not see it, and you have access to it, something is horribly wrong with you. Don't be afraid of subtitles. Just go. This guy, like he mentioned Snowpiercer, but he also made The Host and Mother and Okja, which I didn't even like that much, but it's still pretty good. So there's really no reason not to see this thing. And I can't wait. It's like the film I can't wait to see again the most right now. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can't wait to see it again. It's one of the best movies of the year, if not the best film I've seen all year. It's hard to talk about without giving anything away, because I don't want to give anything away, but I want people to see this movie. It is amazing. Everything about it, it's so beautifully directed and so surprising, at every turn. You have no idea where this thing is going, and again, what it's saying about classism and what it's saying about, these families is pretty remarkable. But, this is as strong a movie as I've seen all year, and I was just blown away by it. I just, as soon as it was over, I was just like, okay, I wanted to sit through it one more time. It's great. It's a great movie. Now, it's only playing in like 4 theaters. It's playing in Evanston. It's playing at the Landmark, at the Arclight, and at the, where I saw it, which is the AMC River East downtown. Mm-hmm. Eric, is it going to open wider, you think?
Oh yeah, I mean the businesses that this movie is doing right now is up there with the movies that you would expect, the movies that end up being Oscar players and stuff like that. That's the kind of money it's making right now in 33 theaters this week. Neon, I don't know how fast they're going to do it. They may try to extend this thing as far as they possibly can through award season.
Yeah.
But they should really start methodically getting this into a few hundred more theaters next week and maybe another 500 theaters in the week after that, because the iron is hot right now and Neon needs to strike.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think this is going to be sticking around for a long time. I think once people start to see it, more people start to see it, the word is going to spread, and it's going to be around for, I think, for the rest of the year at least. And it's obviously going to be mentioned at the end of the year when people are putting their lists together and when the awards situations arise. This thing is going to be this is going to be talked about for the rest of the year.
I'm curious, Eric, if you think this actually has a possibility of like a flat out Best Picture nomination.
I think it does. I mean,
yeah, I do too.
I agree. Yeah. I wouldn't bet on it right now, but I wouldn't bet on most movies right now being Best Picture, because we still got 2 months of movies to go.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that this, for a while there, I think, The Farewell had an opportunity to get in the Best Picture, and, I don't know if they're going to nominate 2 foreign language films. That'd be obviously fine with that.
Yeah.
But I think that if they're going to do it, Parasite might be the one that now takes over that spot.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, it's a great film. that's all there is to it. It's a great film. All right. Next week, what do we got? We got The Lighthouse. We got Jojo Rabbit. Right.
Yeah.
The current war returns.
The current war. Okay.
The current war director's cut.
Yeah. We were all waiting. We were all waiting for that.
Yep, exactly.
And actually, that Bruce Springsteen movie, Western Stars, is coming out next week, too.
Okay, all right.
Western Stars, Black and Blue with Naomi Harris,
right.
Thriller, and some horror movie from Blumhouse called Countdown.
Right. I saw the trailer for it. Well, yeah. Oh, boy. Uh-huh.
They are burying the hell out of that one.
Yes, they are. All right. Steve, we'll talk to you next week, okay, buddy?
Yes.
Thanks, man.
Take care.
All right. Eric, you hang on, okay? All right, Eric's going to hang on. When we come back, we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll go box office right here on 720 WGN.
Girls.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are on 720 WGN, and it is Monday morning, which means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. We are also going to talk about the best movie endings of all time. And we've just reviewed the new movies, talking about what we're going to see next week. But Eric Childress is with us. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Eric writes about the box office every week. Was this this weekend average, or did the movies make more money than you thought they would?
Well, it did. I mean, overall, it did for an October weekend. It was very good. I mean, the top four films, I think, grossed $100 million just by themselves. So that's very good. Individually, though, you know, like starting at the movie at the top, though, whether or not they're actually going to turn a profit is another story.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about it. Number one is Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, $36 million. How is that compared to the first one?
Not good. Not good at all. I mean, it might surprise you, but the original Maleficent actually opened to $69 million
Wow.
back in 2014. Yeah. That was a summer release by Disney at the end of May after Memorial Day. $69 million, grossed over $240 million in the U.S., grossed over $758 million worldwide.
Wow.
Yes.
I just don't remember it being impactful at all. I really don't remember much of it at all.
Yeah, I don't think people remember the movie itself, but at that time, it was just making money hand over fist. I think it surprised surprised Disney how much money that movie made. Now, they've been trying to get that sequel made for many years now.
Yeah.
And now 5 years later, people are just like, you know, oh, really? That movie existed, right? Oh, well, yeah. So speaking of not striking while the iron was hot, and this movie cost also $185 million.
Wow.
Yeah, so this movie, I mean, it did the reasonable business overseas. I think it's like over $140 million worldwide. But this movie's going to have to get over $500 million before it starts to even talk about possibly making a profit on it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Was it the right time of year to release this thing?
No. I think that it almost seemed like Disney did this movie a favor by giving it any kind of, you know, outside launch anyway. Because, I mean, the summer was filled. I mean, Disney has released $4 billion movies in a row. Obviously, all, you know, sequels and franchise movies and things like that. But, you know, you would think that this would be right in that same wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And could at least, you know, be, you know, to do like, you know, $500 million or something. But I don't know why they chose to release it in October as opposed to maybe holding it till next summer, possibly. Because it's just like, were they trying to start the holiday season early?
Instead
of November? Yeah, and do it 2 weeks early, and they figure they're like, well, if we release it 2 weeks early, we'll announce it as an event film, and plus, it's kind of scary enough so it'll give people, you know, families something to take their kids to on pre-Halloween weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah.
Number two, Joker, $29.2 million. It's up to almost $250 million. Man, oh man.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's gonna cross the $300 million in the U.S. It is this week. It's going to pass $750 million worldwide. They're talking at least $900 million for it.
I would have never predicted that.
I thought it was going to fall off more than it did. I'm kind of, the staying power has surprised me. I thought that the interest would be there opening weekend, and then the controversy and people having, you know, with eyes will have seen the movie and realize, well, there's nothing to this.
Yeah.
But, you know, the DC saying, hey, you know, Suicide Squad was a big hit too.
Yeah.
And I don't know anyone that likes Suicide Squad, even the people that say they liked it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I didn't like it. I'll be honest about it. No. I didn't like Joker either. I think Joker's one of the worst films of the year.
Yeah.
All right, number three, Zombieland Double Tap, $26.7 million. How's that compared to the first?
Better than the first one. First one opened at like $24 million. You take the inflation considering, it's more like $29 million, so tickets probably are down a little bit on this, but Sony will take a $26 million opening for this, especially going into the pre-Halloween weekend next week. If word of mouth is decent enough, I think that this will be a much better choice than Countdown next weekend for the Halloween crowd.
So I think that, you know, but they did, the budget is a little bit higher on this one. The first one only cost $24 million. This one cost $43 million. And the first one, you know, it did $75 million in the U.S., but it only did a little over $100 million worldwide. So it's not like this was some big international hit.
Right.
This is a purely a domestic hit. I think that you can make an argument that the first one actually lost a couple bucks. But, you know, it certainly did well enough on video that, you know, 10 years later, it was like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Adam's Family comes in at number four, $16 million, 56 total.
Yeah, this one's doing okay. It was a $40 million budget, and it looks like it's probably going to go over $80 million. That's the kind of pace it's on right now. If it gets a couple international bucks in there somewhere and gets over $100 million, it could turn a small little profit.
Okay. Wow, Gemini Man. Whoa.
Ooh, yeah.
Number five, Gemini Man, $8.5 million. It's only made $36 million. Oh, my God. I mean, this has got to be one of the biggest bombs in Will Smith's history, right?
Yeah, without question. Yeah, I mean, this thing is probably not even going to make $50 million in the U.S. It's going to make less than Ad Astra. That's the way it looks right now, because this thing fell off sharply this week. Not doing great business overseas. It even opened in China this week. You know, shout out to South Park. But Yeah, this one has only done about $140 million worldwide so far too, and it cost $138 million. So
wow,
yeah.
Abominable, $3.5 million up to $53.9 million. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's more of a shrug than anything else. It looks like it's probably going to lose money for Universal, but you know they've had a pretty good year, so they can take this hit.
Okay, Downton Abbey still in the top ten.
Yeah. Downton Abbey, one of a couple milestones in the top 10 this week, becoming Focus Features' all-time highest domestic grossing film, passing Brokeback Mountain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, I never expected this movie to make almost $90 million.
I don't think Focus thought that. I think Focus would have been happy with 50.
Yeah.
They probably would have been happy with 40. I don't think anyone quite saw this coming. I don't think the projections on even on opening weekend were all over the map, and I wasn't about to bet that this thing was going to do over $30 million on opening weekend.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Okay, and then number eight is Judy, made $2 million, $19 million total. The buzz on Renee Zellweger is going to keep this thing around for a little bit?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I mean, it's doing pretty. I mean, it's. I think Roadside might have left a few bucks on the table by maybe not expanding this maybe a little bit earlier. But still, it's the fifth highest grossing movie in their history. It has a chance to be the third. It's going to pass Peanut Butter Falcon sometime this week. It has a chance of possibly outgrossing Jeff Nichols' Mud, which is the third highest grossing film in their history right now. Mm. And I think that that this has done well enough. I mean, it's $20 million that's going to gross. Doesn't sound sexy, obviously, but for a movie like this, a small budget movie, and all the hype is going to be on Zellweger's performance.
Yeah,
you'll see her name cast about quite a bit for the end of the year.
Oh well, there's no question about it.
Yeah,
it's that kind of performance. And mm-hmm. Then, man, Hustlers, over $100 million. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, this is one of the success stories of the year. Over $100 million. A $20 million budget. All female cast, female director. This is quite a story. I mean, you put aside my thoughts on it. I'm not crazy about the movie, but financially, this is actually absolutely one of the really big positive stories of the year.
No question about it. All right, what are we looking for next week?
I would not be surprised if Joker retakes the top spot.
Okay,
I think that Joker. I think if anything is probably the biggest horror movie in the lot next week, and even though it's almost a full week before Halloween, it's the weekend people are seeing movies.
Right.
And I think Maleficent could take a big hit. Joker has not been dropping huge, it could come out on top. And so probably, I don't think any of the new movies are going to bump off the top three from this week.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, that's about right. Okay, Eric, thanks, buddy.
Sure thing.
All right, we'll talk with Eric next week. And Steve, and we'll review the new movies and check out the box office as well. All right, let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. The fog has lifted. You couldn't see anything out the windows about an hour ago. It was like pea soup. But it's lifted. Looks pretty beautiful out there this morning. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we have Blackhawks Express that we're going to play as well. But right now, we want to talk about movies that have great endings. What are some of your favorite movies that have, like, really, really great endings? There's a lot of them to choose from, and I want to get into some of that. So what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. At the, you know, before the show, I did mention the first one that like popped into my head is of course Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes is one of the most one of the best endings ever. You know, the whole Statue of Liberty thing is just so iconic and so great. And it's one of those endings that that is so iconic. That you can't think about that movie without thinking about just how incredible that ending is, and that's one of those that's right near the top of movies that have great endings. So I'm reading here from Collider, where they put together their best movie endings of all time. And here's their explanation for it. Making a great movie is not an easy task, but if a filmmaker succeeds in getting just about everything right, it still hinges on one thing, the ending. How are you going to let the audience out of your story? What do you want them thinking about as they leave the theater? What feeling do you want to stick with them? Getting all of that across on top of wrapping up your story can be tricky, but more often than not, the ending is more of a footnote than anything. Not as memorable as what came before, but precious few films are able to take the conclusion to new heights, offering a final scene or a shot that viewers are unable to shake. This may come on the heels of a massive plot twist. It may just be genius visual ideas that tap into the film's thematic through line, or it may be a frustratingly, excitingly ambiguous note that leaves a portion of the conclusion up to the viewer. There's no math equation that gives you a great ending. There's no formula that you can stick to in order to guarantee a brilliant conclusion. And that's part of what makes endings so memorable. They don't happen too often. So we've rounded up some of the best. So the first one they mention here is Psycho. Which the final shot of Psycho, well, not the final shot, but the final, because the final shot is the truck being pulled, or the car being pulled up out of the water. Just that final moment where Anthony Perkins is sitting in the chair, you know, he's not going to swat the fly. And then like the mother's face is kind of superimposed on his as he looks into the camera. Classic stuff. It's one of the best. It says, before M. Night Shyamalan or the Coen brothers, there was Alfred Hitchcock, and boy, did he know how to end a movie. Obviously, the most famous Hitchcock ending of all time comes in the form of Psycho, which not only throws the audience for a loop at the end of the first act by killing off the perceived protagonist, Marion Crane, played by Janet Leigh, but offers a doozy of a twist at the end of the film. The audience is led to believe that Norman Bates' mother, is the one who killed Marion in the shower earlier in the film, and thus the tension continues to play out. But when Sam and Lila, played by John Gavin and Vera Miles, ventured to the Bates Motel to question Norman's mother, it's revealed that Norman's mother is nothing but a rotting corpse in a chair in the film's final moments. Norman sits alone in a room at the courthouse, having been outed as the real murderer. A psychiatrist explains that Norman murdered his mother, but out of guilt exhumed her corpse and began acting as if she was still alive, sometimes pretending he himself was his mother. In the final shot, we close in on Norman's face as the voice of his mother plays in his head, claiming that she wouldn't hurt a fly. The murders were all Norman's doing, all while Norman gets this devilish smirk on his face as the credits roll. Hitchcock was a consummate entertainer, and Psycho is a perfect example of a filmmaker using every trick in the book to take his audience on a thrill ride from beginning to end. The twist ending not only makes perfect sense, it was inspired by true-life serial killer Ed Gein. but leaves the audience's jaw on the floor as the lights come up in the theater. Yeah. Yeah. let's see. Here is Lisa in Waukegan. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Happy October. One of my favorite endings is in Cop with James Woods.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know what the problem with that, though, Lisa, is that they actually had that in the trailer.
I never saw the trailer.
Yeah, the final moment of the movie is actually in the trailer.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. I have no idea. And it's a really great ending. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but it's a movie called Cop with James Woods. And yeah, that scene in the trailer.
I'm glad I didn't see the trailer.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, I loved it. And War of the Roses, another wonderful ending that shocks people.
Yeah, I love that movie, too. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. Yeah, War of the Roses. Yeah, War of the Roses.
I haven't heard that one. I haven't even heard that mentioned in years.
War of the Roses?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love that movie.
I loved it, too.
I love that movie. I do. I just think it's fantastic. And, yeah, directed by Danny DeVito. I think it's classic. I think it's fantastic. Let's see. Movie ending, what about Soylent Green with Heston? Yeah, Soylent Green is people. 773 error code says, Marco, Southeast Side, the end of The Notebook was great when they held each other when they passed. 724 error code says, great endings, Godfather 1, Smokey and the Bandit, La Bamba, and Body Snatchers from 1978. Yeah, that final moment in the Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland, you know, you realize that Donald Sutherland is in fact, you know, been invaded, and he's not the right guy. He just goes, and points. Yep. It's a fantastic moment. Smokey and the Bandit, I'm trying to think of What is it? Special ending about Smokey and the Bandit? 419 area code says, Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home. Mark the Breadman says, being a huge Star Wars fan, I like the ending of Rogue One, where Darth Vader just goes medieval on the rebels. Let me tell you something. Rogue One, I love Rogue One. We've talked about this before. It's weird. That's my favorite Star Wars movie of any of them. I'm including, you know, the first trilogy. I'm including the latest trilogy. My favorite Star Wars movie ever is Rogue One. I love that movie. I love it. And I think most of it has to do with the fact that everybody dies. Like, everybody dies in Rogue One. And you know that going in, because if you're familiar with the story of Star Wars is, what happened before A New Hope began.
Many Bothams.
You knew that that was going to happen. So I'm not ruining it for anybody, but I think a lot of people were just kind of like, not only that, but then they bring out the Peter Cushing thing, where they kind of, you know, resurrect Peter Cushing, which was really weird, but also awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I saw Rogue One, I saw it on the day we had the office Christmas party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we were here for the I was here for the Christmas party, and then I just went, you know, not here, but we were in the Trib building at the time, and I was here for the Christmas party, and then hung out, ate, you know, had all that stuff, and then headed across the street to the 600 North Michigan, to see it, and I love that movie. I think Rogue One is great, and then, man, the last 10 minutes of that movie is ridiculous.
It's just unbelievably awesome.
When he is just when Darth Vader is just kicking everybody's ass, it's so cool. It's like really badass.
It's the Vader I always waited to see.
Yeah, that's what you want. When you want Darth Vader, that's the dude. That's the guy. Mm. Yeah, the last 10 minutes of that movie is fantastic, and then the whole like reveal that Carrie Fisher at the end and it's so good. It's just really, really good. And I know that it's not considered, you know, people don't like it as much as, you know, some of the other stuff. But I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to the latest one, to the new one.
I cannot wait, Nick.
And
I hope you'll let me know when you go, because I'll go with you.
It's, it opens like the second week in December.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I thought the last one was great. I know the I know people really disliked what the hell was it called? The right? No, that's the new one's Rise of Skywalker, right?
Yeah.
The last one was The Last Jedi, right?
Yeah.
That was what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. And I know it caught a lot of they caught a lot of flack. People hated it.
Oh, I thought it was good.
I thought it was great. Yeah. Yeah. But still, Rogue One is the deal for me. All right, how about this? Movie endings, 312-981-7200. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. This is just such a heartbreaking movie. Here's what they say about it. Heartbreak is hell, and memory is a cage that keeps us there. But could we ever escape the lure of love, lust, and all its perils, even if we knew for sure we were doomed to fail? Probably not. In Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Joel, played by Jim Carrey, and Clem, played by Kate Winslet, discover that just after a devastating breakup leads the impulsive Clem to erase Joel from her memory for good via an experimental new procedure. Naturally, Joel decides to do the same, and the bulk of the film follows his desperate attempt to thwart that decision as his memories of the woman he loves are stripped from his mind one by one. At the end of the film, Joel and Clem stand face to face, no memory of their relationship, but with the knowledge that they were once in love, the irresistible desire to give it another shot. They know they're not at all certain it's going to end in pain, but they're proven a bad fit. Laughing and crying and desperate not to feel lost and alone, they accept it, and that's okay. That's the cost of putting yourself on the line for love, and that's just fine. Eternal Sunshine boasts plenty of clever camera work and narrative innovation, but the simple, honest, emotional truth of the final frames is what cements it as a classic. Yeah. It's such a heartbreaking movie. Oh. Yeah, and I saw that I was going through a particularly bad breakup when that movie came out, too. the timing of the release of that movie couldn't have been worse, at least for me, in terms of what I was going through. It was the worst time to see that movie. All right, great endings, 312-981-7200. What are your favorite movie endings? There's a ton of them out there. 312-981-7200. How about, and also, not just great endings, but also maybe frustrating endings. Because there are some that have, huh? Maybe it's one of those abrupt endings where you go, what? But yeah, movie endings. That's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. And we'll get back to it right after we break here on 7. Okay. Okay, we're back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, we're talking about movies with great endings. Really memorable, awesome endings for movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Rob on WGN. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how are we doing tonight?
All right, what's up?
Okay, I got two of them for you. Both of them by Stephen King. The one is more Alfred Hitchcock style, I would think, like with Shawshank Redemption, where Andy wants that little rock hammer, and nobody can ever figure out what he needed it for except making those little rock figures till the end.
Yeah.
And number two, the ultimate scary one, I think, from King, is the end of Carrie.
Yeah, the final...
The girl is visiting the gravesite,
right.
It's a dream, and that hand comes right up out of the dirt. I was in the theater, and there was so much screaming going on when that happened.
Yeah, no, that's one of the biggest... That's actually one of the biggest shocks in movie history, is the ending of Carrie, when that hand comes up out of the ground. I remember the first time I saw it. Rob, thanks for the call. I remember the first time I saw Carrie. I saw it at the... It was weird because we went late at night on a Friday night, which was kind of unusual because, you know, most of the time when I went to movies with my dad, it would be Sunday morning. We would go down to the Loop and see, you know, a couple of movies of every Sunday, and we would take the train and we would get down there, take the L. And we most of the time during the day. But for some reason, we went on a late Friday night. My friend Dan Long, not the one that works here, but my friend growing up, Dan Long, went with me and my dad to see Carrie. And we went on a Friday night, which was unusual. And we also went to a theater that we'd never really gone to before. It was the Lake Theater in Oak Park. And so it was just the whole situation was just a little bit off. Everything about it was a little bit off. And I remember we parked, and it was late at night, and it seemed deserted. Like Oak Park seemed completely deserted, and it was an unfamiliar theater and kind of an unfamiliar neighborhood. So I was a little bit off anyway. So I remember we walked into the theater, and this was back in the 70s, you know, when the movie came out. This was when, you know, you would stand in the lobby and wait for the next movie, you know, wait for the movie to get out. But you can, you know, you're standing in the lobby and you're waiting. And so we're in the lobby waiting, you know, to get into the theater. And for people who know Carrie, that last moment in Carrie where the hand comes up out of the grave, that just causes people to jump out of their seats and scream. And so we're waiting in the lobby to see this movie in this weird theater on a late Friday night, feeling a little strange. And all of a sudden we hear the entire theater just scream. We were like, what? You know, because obviously the hand just came up out of the ground. And so we're in the lobby and we hear like the entire audience just scream. And we were like, uh-oh. So we were already ready to freak out. So we get into the theater and we sit down. And then the movie, obviously the movie completely, the movie scared the hell out of me. Carrie, that is truly still one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. And, you know, because I was so freaked out by the entire movie, I had forgotten that we were waiting in the lobby and the scream occurred, you know, with the audience. So I had completely forgotten about that because the movie had already destroyed me, already scared the hell out of me. So at the end, when the hand did come up out of the ground, I mean, you could just, everybody in that theater. That's classic. It's just a classic, classic ending. Here's Eric on WGN. Hi, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
The two movies that I remember is Lady in the Cage and The Truman Show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Truman Show is a great movie. That's another great one. It's another Jim Carrey movie. That's the second Jim Carrey movie we've mentioned here. Yeah, Lady in the Cage. I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
Yeah, that one was just, to me, was the static in the movie that just kept on building. You just couldn't wait to get the bad guy out the house and let her free, you know. And finally, when she gets free, you know, when he runs out the house, trips, and his head gets ran over by a freaking car.
Yeah. All right, Eric. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
All right, take care. Great. Got a bunch of texts coming in, people with their endings, movie endings. 952 says, for me, Gone with the Wind. 847 area code says, Memento. Memento. I was at a point where I was wondering why I was watching it, and then the ending hit, and I thought, oh, that's why. Dan says, Primal Fear had a great ending. Yes, it did. Edward Norton in that movie. He's so good. That was his first movie.
Was it really?
Yeah. That was his first movie, was Primal Fear. That is an unbelievable first performance.
Yeah.
And do you know that, you know, here's another talking about just first movies, first performances. That was Edward Norton's first performance, and it was obviously classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that is amazing to me, is that... Alan Rickman's first movie is Die Hard.
Yeah.
That's his first movie. Like, right out of the gate, he's Hans Gruber. Like, how can you top that? He's like one of the most legendary villains in movie history, and that was his first performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Incredible. 217 area code says, a couple of great endings. The Departed with Wahlberg standing there in the white suit when Matt Damon opens the door. Yeah, that's a great ending too. How about The Searchers? Oh yeah, The Searchers has The Searchers, one of the most iconic final shots in movie history. That's my favorite. That's my favorite Western of all time, is The Searchers. It's so good. Also, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's kind of sad now that John Candy is gone. Yeah, I was surprised at how emotional Planes, Trains, and Automobiles got, because it's a pretty silly movie for the most, you know, for most of the movie. It's funny, but I didn't expect it to get as emotional as it was.
Yeah.
Because you really do care. I mean, you feel terrible for the John Candy character. Mm-hmm. But it's a really lovely. I mean, the final shot, just that shot of John Candy smiling, and that's the final moment in the movie. It's great. 608 area code says, the final montage in Toy Story 3 with Andy giving the toys to Bonnie and spending an afternoon playing with them for one last time before leaving for college. I was a 35-year-old man watching it with my daughter and bawling. Yeah. Well, you know, I talked about this before. Those Pixar movies, man. I mean, you're going to, if you see a Pixar movie, eventually you're going to cry. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And all the Toy Story movies make me cry. I mean, you know, I was talking about, you know, I've talked about this before, but man, you know, the first 10 minutes of Up, I don't even know what, you know? I mean, you figure you're going to, you know, I've said this before, like, you go to a Pixar movie and you know at some point you're going to cry, probably at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Up, it's the first 10 minutes. Like, they get right to it. It's like, I figured I was going to cry late in the movie, but not 5 minutes into it. The first 10 minutes of that movie kills me. It's so unbelievable. 301 area code says the original Planet of the Apes and the first two sequels. Okay. 815 area code says the new Jedi movies are good, but you have to forget about the 132 books that you've read in the past about the Star Wars saga. I've never read a book. Never read a Star Wars.
Yeah.
I've never.
Same.
No. So. All right, let's take a quick break here. The phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. We're talking about movies with great endings. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio. It's a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we also have a Blackhawks Express from yesterday's game. Okay, we're talking about, excuse me, we're talking about movies that have a great ending. And let's see. 815 area code says the ending of Python's Holy Grail. I know people who hate that ending. I think it's great. But I know people who hate that ending, and it's a very hilarious ending, I think. But the movie just kind of stops, and then the cops come in. And the movie just, like, it just basically ends. So, 301 area code says, I know that Nick likes the ending of The Mist, but I hated it. I love that ending. I think that's really one of the darkest and craziest endings ever in movies. And it was not the ending, that was not the ending that Stephen King, you know, had in the original story. But he prefers it. Like, Stephen King has said that he prefers Darabont's really dark ending. I couldn't believe that it ended like that. I was just beside myself at the end of The Mist. I remember when they screened that movie for critics. We were in the screening room, and they showed we watched the movie, and when that movie was over, I remember sitting in the screening room, a pretty full screening room where everybody was just completely, like, obliterated by that ending. Like, could not believe that's how the movie ended. I love the ending of The Mist. 301 area code says the Night of the Living Dead has a powerful ending. Great ending. No question about it. 815 area code says, here's a joke for you. You can pick some really bad movie and say it had a great ending because it was over. Okay. Paul in Chicago says, great movie endings, considering the Halloween is my favorite, is Frailty. Yeah, that's a great movie. That is a great movie, Frailty. The late, great Bill Paxton. 301 area code says, LA Confidential. True. All right, Collider put together some of their thoughts here. and they go with Inception. Yeah. I love Inception, and I love the ending of Inception. I think it's great. The film that spawned 1,000 Reddit theories. Christopher Nolan is known for his twisty narrative, but Inception pushed to the limit as Nolan presents four stories happening simultaneously at wildly different paces, tracking a team of extractors incepting the mind of a corporate heir. The emotional through line of the film is Leonardo DiCaprio's Dom Cobb, who lives in exile as his wife framed him for her murder back in the U.S. He dreams of seeing his children again, and at the film's end, as the team has seemingly completed its mission successfully, Dom is finally reunited with his children. The camera pans to a spinning top, the sign of whether or not he is dreaming, but cuts back before the audience even ever knows for sure whether it falls over. What's important here is not whether Dom is dreaming or not, but how he feels. That's the brilliance of the ending. Narratively, it offers an ominous conclusion, but emotionally, it's 100% satisfying. Dom is happy, whether he's trapped in a dream or if he's finally at peace. Here's the thing. It's pretty obvious to me, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, the ending of Inception, I don't know what's going on. It's pretty obvious to me that he's not in a dream anymore. And he's home. You know, when he spins the top, that final moment where you just got the top spinning, it starts to wobble a little bit, just a little bit. And in the dream world, it doesn't. So in the dream world, you know, it doesn't wobble, but you can see it just wobbling a little bit. And on top of that, he actually sees his kids. Like, they make eye contact. He sees his kids. So it's not the same image that was used over and over again. I know a lot of people are, you know, had been, like, really sort of confused by the end of Inception. I don't know. It just makes perfect sense to me. Makes perfect sense. So, let's see. Here's Bruce on WGN. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Nick. What's going on tonight, dude?
Hey, what's up?
How about Fallen with Denzel and John Goodman? I've always loved that movie.
I have not seen that in years. I don't even remember the ending.
So, you know, it's about angels and demons and about how they're trying to trap the devil. And at the end, Denzel is in like a log cabin out in the middle of nowhere smoking a cigarette laced with cyanide. Because the devil's inside him now. And I got him. And I don't know if it would have been ruined the ending. Well, it's been out for 20 years, so
yeah.
Whatever, right? You know? But so he kills himself by smoking the cyanide cigarette, and the devil has to be inside something living only for a few moments before it's going to die off.
Right.
And there's a cat in the forest. And he gets inside the cat and takes off.
Oh, man, I don't even remember. Oh, wow.
I love that movie.
Yeah, so, I haven't seen that one in years. It's been a long time. I'll have to go back and watch that one again. All right, Bruce.
Even though I ruined it, I recommend
that's okay. I've already seen. I have seen it. So I. So
yeah.
All right, Bruce. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, Fallen. I haven't seen that one in a long time. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, one of my favorites is American Graffiti. When Dreyfuss is on the plane and he looks down and sees that T-Bird. And, you know, it's symbolic that he's grown up and he's going to leave Southern California behind him.
Yeah, yeah. And then they went and made more American Graffiti.
Well, yeah, they didn't need to do any of that.
Yeah,
no,
they didn't need to make that one. All right, thank you, Steve.
Don't leave it. Don't leave out Sundance and Butch and Sundance.
Yeah, yeah, that's another. That's got a great ending, and it just kind of freezes at the end. But
yep, and it expands the picture.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, Butch and Sundance, a great movie. And you know they're dead at the end. We don't need to see them. I like the fact that they freeze on the two guys and you can remember them that way because you know they're dead. So, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. What about E.T.? E.T. is Steven Spielberg at the top of his game, they says, and he's a living legend. It's not just that the ending is emotional or powerful, it's that the entire movie earns the farewell between E.T. and Elliot, so that when it races to its climactic finish and heartfelt goodbye between the two leads, you can feel what's gained and what's lost in that moment. The scene also functions as the culmination of the film's themes, where Elliot find some peace with his parents' divorce, learning how he can be good and still loved even when someone he loves leaves him. So Matt Goldberg wrote that. He said it's absolutely beautiful. I haven't seen E.T. in years.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, I'm with you. It was a great ending.
Yeah. I mean, I like E.T. I don't love it. I know a lot of people, you know, think it's the greatest movie ever made. But it does earn the emotion at the end. There's no question about it. And I remember seeing that movie in the theater and just people losing it at the end. Just theater people just weeping.
Yeah.
So
so just to follow up, you know, Butch and Sundance.
Yeah.
I gotta say one of my favorites in that same genre, Shane.
Well, yeah, Shane's a legendary. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a legend. That's a legendary movie and a legendary ending. Iconic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. All right. How about this? Seven. Says, go ahead and say it. You know you want to. What's in the box? Seven's ending has become iconic and endlessly quoted because it's a perfectly crafted culmination of an intricately threaded film that cements John Doe, played by Kevin Spacey, as one of the best film villains of all time. Scripted by Andrew Kevin Walker, directed by David Fincher, Seven stars Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman as Taylor and Somerset, two detectives on the hunt for the biblical serial killer John Doe, who hunts down his victims according to the seven deadly sins. Methodical and precise, and always one step ahead, John Doe leaves behind a string of deviant tableaus inspiring his victims' deadly sins, and he saves his best for last just when the detectives think they have the upper hand. Doe reveals his full hand. They were always in a trap. He wins, and they become the final pieces to complete his life's hideous work. A box is delivered, and the decapitated head of Taylor's wife is inside it. And in that instance, he becomes Rage, falling into lockstep with the killer's plan. He executes John Doe in cold blood, a fate Doe had set for himself, punishment of the sin of envy. It's disturbing and expertly crafted, and it's easy to see why it's become one of the most famous twist endings of all time. It's also easy to see why the studio mandated a brief coda that follows that delivers a salve in form of a Hemingway quote. Fincher fought for the film to end in blackness, and he wanted his audience to sit with the brutality.
That...
Seven is interesting because I look at it as a downbeat ending, obviously. Just that final the final moments with Morgan Freeman in that, I look at it as a downbeat. It's really funny. My former producer Dan Chagru and I have talked about in the past. We talked about that, and he looks at it as an upbeat ending. He thinks it's a hopeful ending.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland. If you want a great movie ending that won't crush your soul, how about Charlie Chaplin's speech at the end of The Great Dictator?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the most inspiring moments in cinema ever.
Yep, no question about it. No question about it. It is absolutely brilliant, and it's classic. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not too late, I would like to see more great endings that are happy or hopeful. I mean, yeah, I mean, you can list some of the stuff that you've done already, like The Mist and Seven and all that, but, I prefer the happier endings, and I'm sure there's got to be some movies with great, happy endings.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. We can get to those.
Good.
All right,
I look forward to hearing them.
All right, thanks.
Have a good one.
All right. Brian Gymkhana, of course. It's only a matter of time before Brian went after Gymkhana. Gymkhana has such a great ending. Triumph, discovery, elation, and chalk dust. One cannot help but vociferously cheer as this monumental film comes to a close. Gymkhana. Another one voting for Inception. 312 area code. I was shocked and horrified at the end of Primal Fear. I think we all were. You know? Edward Norton is so good in that movie. And that whole ending is just like, what? 419 area code says, one flew over the cuckoo's nest. McMurphy is free from pain, and the chief is finally free. 301 area code says, horror of Dracula. I just watched that over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah. One of my favorite movies of all time, Peter Cushing. 419 area code says, the end of The Burbs is so good. Citizen's Arrest, Citizen's Arrest, it's so funny. That's Sean.
I'll go with that one. Love me some Tom Hanks.
I'm not a fan of the ending of The Burbs.
Really?
Yeah. Because the family shouldn't be murderers. They should be innocent. Because the paranoia of the neighbors is what that movie should be about.
I agree with
you. And they should not have trunks full of bodies and stuff like that. They should not have been, the Slopex should not have been guilty.
Yeah.
That's the only part of the movie I don't like. I love that movie. And the late, great Rick Dukeman is so funny in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And Bruce Dern, come on. No, I love that movie. I just and you know, that wasn't the original ending. That movie was made during a writer's strike.
Oh, that's right.
It was shot during a writer's strike, and then that's the ending that they ended up with. You know, the studio forced them to make the, because the original ending, they weren't guilty. Like that family was just like just trying to live their lives in this neighborhood and being bombarded by, you know, maniac, paranoid neighbors. Which is what the whole movie is about. But I love that movie. The Burbs is so funny. It's just so funny. So, all right, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk more. I've got more movie endings here that we're going to get to. And what about you guys? Movies with great endings. 312-981-7200. And we'll get back to it right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here above downtown Chicago, here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke just a little bit later on, because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. And we've got a Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. And right now we're talking about movies with great endings. What are some of your favorites? Which ones pop into your head? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. See, 312 area code texts in. You guys can text in as well. Many Twilight Zone episodes had great endings, and Blair Witch has a great ending. Yeah, Blair Witch has a phenomenal ending, and that the final shot of Blair Witch is terrifying. And I back that movie. I back Blair Witch. I know that it's a very divisive movie. I know some people can't stand it. I love it. I think it's scary, and I still think it holds up. Mike from Novak Construction, thank you, buddy. I'd like the movie ending of Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid the way it faded into an all time picture. Yep, it's a classic. All right, how about There Will Be Blood? Oh, man, that movie. Here's what they say about There Will Be Blood. This is what's called a mic drop. Paul Thomas Anderson already crafted one pretty terrific and big ending with Boogie Nights. But when it came to closing out his 2008 opus, There Will Be Blood, he took no prisoners. After spending over 2 hours with Daniel Day-Lewis's Daniel Plainview, the audience comes to understand what makes this bad dude tick. We see his life ebb and flow, and the film's final act shifts forward in time to when Plainview is wealthy, if lonely, an oil tycoon. But a visit from Paul Dano's Eli Sunday lifts his spirits in the most nefarious way, and the long-held tension between these two characters comes to a bloody and I'm finished still stands as one of the best and most striking closing lines in cinema history. I drink your milkshake. Yeah, I love There Will Be Blood. I think Paul Thomas Anderson does a good job with endings. You know, my favorite movie of all time is Magnolia, and I adore the ending of that movie. The final shot of Claudia actually looking into the camera and smiling. That's a beautiful moment. It is just beautiful, especially, you know, you sit through for over 3 hours watching this movie, and it's a lot of really sad characters in that movie. These are really flawed and sad people. And to see the saddest person, the person the character that really, you know, that really the, some of the worst stuff in the movie happens to her. She's sad the whole movie. And to have her just look into the camera and smile at the end of the movie, that's one of my favorite endings of all time. 773 area code says, how about the endings of Seven? We mentioned Seven. Freaks, Bride of Frankenstein, Hitcher, and Night of the Demon. Yeah. I remember The Hitcher. God, I remember when that movie came out. It got destroyed by Siskel and Ebert. And I think one of the reasons why the movie was not, you know, at first a big hit. I mean, it ultimately, you know, became a cult phenomenon, the movie. But when it first came out, the Siskel and Ebert just ripped it to shreds. They were just not kind to it at all. And I think they kind of went out of their way to rip that movie apart. And I think it really did affect, you know, the box office of it. Like, them ripping it apart really did affect the box office of it. And it could have been a much bigger hit than it was. And it took a long time for it to get the following it now has. And I mean, people look at The Hitcher now and they realize, you know, I mean, it's a classic now. But when it first came out, man. The 815 area code says Will Smith 7 pounds had a really good ending. I don't even remember. No, I have no memory of that at all. 708 area code says I love the ending of The Farewell. 319 area code says here are just two that I can think of right now. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was a classic with cool music. And the second choice was in the comedy Napoleon Dynamite. I love the wedding scene with his brother singing the technology song with the horse going off into the sunset. 224 area code says 500 Days of Summer. That was a heartbreaking movie. That was really a heartbreaker. Oh, you want to talk about great ending? Social Network.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Such a great so great. One of the most expertly constructed films in recent memory, The Social Network packs a punch from beginning to end. While many balked at David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin's tackling of a Facebook movie, the finished film is a prescient narrative of power plays in the 21st century. Movers and shakers are not just 50-something men. They're teenaged guys' geniuses thrown into the deep end without an emotional maturity to handle. Jesse Eisenberg's Mark Zuckerberg is rich and powerful. The camera lingers as he refreshes and refreshes and refreshes the Facebook page of his former girlfriend. It's such a great ending. It is perfect. Absolutely perfect. Another David Fincher movie. A lot of David Fincher movies getting picked here for classic endings. All right. Great endings on movies. 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it after we break for the news, which is up next. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a Monday and it's a jokey time. We've got a Blackhawks Express to play back from yesterday's game. And we are talking about movies with great endings. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Got a lot of texts coming in. Phone lines are open, 312-981-7200. Next one mentioned by Collider, Collider.com, is Vertigo, which, of course, is a masterpiece. Arguably Hitchcock's most twisted film, the culmination of his fascinating examination of the male gaze. James Stewart Scotty is the epitome of the male gaze, and yet Hitchcock is just as guilty of this obsession. It ends when our hero seemingly gets everything he wants. The woman he loves is alive. He's conquered his vertigo. He solved the mystery, and yet through dumb luck and circumstance, she falls to her death. His obsession and guilt will never end, and he will always be consumed. It's a powerful metaphor for the nature of cinema, both as viewer and artist. Yeah, it doesn't get much better than Vertigo. I mean, that's just, you know, it's one of the greatest movies ever made, and it's my favorite Hitchcock movie. More texts here. 847 area code says The Crying Game. I haven't seen that movie in years. Shane, which was mentioned already in The Mouse That Roared. Here's the thing about The Crying Game. I saw The Crying Game a couple of months before it got released. So, it, you know, the whole, like, don't give away the twist, all of that stuff, you know, the big buzz about it and everything, it didn't exist. So I had seen it, you know, at a critic screening, and nobody had hyped it up. Nobody had talked about, you know, that there's a big twist to it. So, but the thing is, when I saw the movie, as soon as they go to the beauty parlor, and you see the character. When I saw the movie, I was like, "That's a guy." So I wasn't surprised. There was no, I mean, I didn't think, I was like, to me, it was, I was like, okay, yeah, that's a guy. So it was never like a big surprise to me with the big reveal or anything like that. I was like, that's a guy. And so I was never really like blown away by the surprise or any of that kind of stuff. And I still think the first like hour of that movie is spectacular. Like the stuff with him and Forrest Whitaker, with Stephen Ray and Forrest Whitaker. That's the best stuff in the movie. That first 45 minutes is just phenomenal of The Crying Game. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. I got a good one for you. Kind of a comedy, kind of. It's Canine with Belushi, and the dog's name's Jerry Lee.
Yeah, I don't even remember. Does dog die in that movie?
No, at the very end they think the dog's going to die, and Belushi's sitting there and he's holding it and crying and all this, and the dog is just kind of like opening his eyes, kind of like looking at him. When he looked back at, when Belushi looked back at the dog would just close his eyes. You know?
Yeah. I don't remember.
It was funny.
Yeah,
that was a funny movie.
All right.
He said the dog Chili all the time.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I just remember. All right, thank you, Jeff.
All right, good night.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember that that Canine came out like right around the same time as Turner and Hooch.
Yeah.
And they're essentially kind of the same movie. And I've mentioned this before. You know, when Turner and Hooch came out, the weekend that Turner and Hooch came out, this was back when, you know, I was reviewing movies on Roy Leonard's show every Saturday morning. I'd go down to the studio, and at 9:30 every Saturday morning, Roy and I would review all the new movies. Roy was on vacation the weekend that Turner and Hooch came out. So Kathy O'Malley was filling in. So I go down to the studio to do the show with Kathy, and we're reviewing Turner and Hooch. And this is, like, literally the day after the movie opened. This is a Saturday morning. The movie opened the night before. So, the movie's been out for about 15 hours at this point. And so, we're talking about the movie, and Kathy goes, yeah, I just wish they didn't, I didn't think that they were going to kill off the dog. So, like, she said that right on the air, and I'm like, no, Kathy, no, you can't talk. You can't tell everybody, but the dog dies in Turner and Hooch. You know, 10 hours after the movie was released, the phone lines went nuts. The phone lines just lit up with people. People were mad because she said, yeah, it's too bad they kill off the dog. I'm like, oh. So people were not happy. 708 area code says, it's about the ending of Kubrick's The Shining with Nicholson frozen and then the music with him in the old picture. Yeah, as people are still sort of like, huh? Confounded by that. See, here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello. I don't even know if you know this movie. Are you familiar with The 12 Chairs by Mel Brooks?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Okay, it has such a wonderful kind of heartbreaking, melancholy ending with the two men and give from the bottom of your hearts.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen The 12 Chairs in a long time, but it's a good movie. That's early Mel Brooks. Thank you, John. How about Scream? Slasher movies had become so predictable and paint by numbers. And Carol Glover wrote a whole book about it, Men, Women, and Chainsaws, and coined the phrase Final Girl, a horror trope that's still affected today to this day. Penned by screenwriter Kevin Williamson, Wes Craven's 1996 meta-slasher Scream was constructed by a creative team who knew those tropes in and out, embracing them and subverting them in just the right measure, culminating in a final act reveal that layers on the surprises and sticks the landing with a subtle, smart deconstruction of your standard slasher standoff. Not one killer, but two, including the final girl's supposedly dead boyfriend. Sydney Prescott, played by Neve Campbell, is the final girl, but in her movie, she gets to break the rules and live anyway, giving Scream a refreshing distance from the inherent puritanical leanings of horror's traditional moral metrics, and genuinely surprising the audience in turn. Slasher movies have never been the same after Scream, and the surefire ending is proof in the pudding that self-reflective horror can be more than a gimmick. In fact, it can change the rules. Yeah. Boy, that was such a refreshing movie when that came out. When Scream came out, it was at a time when it was the perfect timing of that movie. Like, it was needed at that time. Such a good movie. All right, 301 area code says Jaws. Yeah. Although I remember the guys from. Why am I blanking on the name of that show with the two guys who test stuff? They blow stuff up, basically.
Mythbusters?
Yeah, Mythbusters.
Yeah. Love
that. They did a whole thing on Jaws. And it was during Shark Week a few years ago. So they did a whole thing on Jaws, and they shot a shotgun. They took a rifle and they shot a gas tank. Or the tank that the shark is chewing on,
pressurized oxygen,
and it wouldn't blow up. That just wouldn't happen. Like, the entire shark just goes boom, and they prove that wrong. So, but Jaws is classic. I just remember the end of the first time I saw Jaws. I remember when Hooper is revealed to not be dead. Like, when Richard Dreyfuss comes back up out of the water, the whole audience cheered because they all thought Hooper was dead. And everybody loves Hooper. Everybody loves Hooper. And so, like, I remember the audience just went nuts when Richard Dreyfuss came back at the end and was not killed. They were very happy about that. Let's see. Here's David on WGN. Hi, David.
How you doing, Nick?
All right.
Hey, I got ending of Jeremiah Johnson with Robert Redford.
I haven't seen that movie in years.
And Steve McQueen and Hell is for Heroes.
Yeah, classic. I haven't seen Jeremiah Johnson in a long time.
Well, my son's names are Jacob and Caleb, so.
Ah, well, there you go. All right, David, thanks.
All right. Love it.
Yep. I know that Robert Redford's got a serious beard in that movie.
Yep.
Got some serious hair.
My dad loves that movie.
Jeremiah Johnson?
Yeah.
I think dads are supposed to like that movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in years. I remember liking it. I remember liking it a lot. I just haven't seen it in a very, very long time. 708 area code says, The World According to Garp with Robin Williams has a shocking ending. Even today, it's such a sad but brilliant ending. Yeah. Great movie. 414 area code says, The ending of Body Heat has always been a particular favorite of mine. William Hurt figures out that he's been played. It's Alan in Milwaukee. Yeah, that's a great movie. Really great movie. So, all right, let's take a break here for some weather. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about movies that have great endings. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here in downtown Chicago on a Monday morning. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's jokey time. We got a Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. That's all coming up. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Talking about movies with great endings. Let's hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. Let's see. 608 area code says, I like the ending to Arlington Road. Yeah, that movie was something, man. I did not see that coming at all. Such a dark, twisted ending. And man, Jeff Bridges is good in that movie. I know that kind of goes without saying because, you know, he's the best actor on the planet, but man, is he good in that movie. That movie came out of nowhere. And it's got that really, really incredible, like, really downbeat, crazy ending. So, 847 area code says, Blue Hawaii, because it's such a beautiful wedding scene and one of my favorite songs. 847 area code says, I love the ending to Blazing Saddles, or should I say endings?
I'm agreeing with that one. I love the ending.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's so funny.
It just keeps going and going.
Yeah. Yeah, now Blazing Saddles is that's my favorite Mel Brooks movie. And as I've said before, he released Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein the same year. I mean,
which is just remarkable for
it's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. That's a pretty good year. You're going to release Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles the same year. The Good, the Bad, the Ugly has a great ending. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? 219 area code says, 773 area code says, Blade Runner. Well, yeah, I'm talking about the real ending of Blade Runner. Like, not the stupid ending where they use the outtakes from The Shining. But, like, the actual director's cut ending. Because there's, like, 12 different versions of Blade Runner. And I love them all. here's Diane on WGN. Hi, Diane.
Yeah, hi, Nick. There's a horror movie came out a few years ago, The Witch.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, I love the ending of that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That was so chilling.
Yeah, it's really a crazy ending. I remember just like because I love that movie. I think that movie. I think that movie is great, and it's got that, and it really does have an insane ending.
Oh yeah, it's something you just don't expect. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy movie. It's a crazy one. All right, Diane, thanks.
All righty, bye.
The witch, man. 773 area code says Terminator. The original Terminator. 630 area code. To me, the end of Carrie with the hand doesn't hold a candle to the baby's eyes at the end of Angel Heart. God, Angel Heart. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. Mickey Rourke. De Niro plays Satan in it. Yeah, classic. 847 area code says, I have a few. Mystic River. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. The ending of that movie. Reservoir Dogs. And not so much the ending about two-thirds of the way through Million Dollar Baby. That movie makes this grown man tear up every time. Yeah, Reservoir Dogs has a pretty great ending. Three, 312, Life is Beautiful. 630 area code, True Romance. It's got a nice happy ending, True Romance. Let's see, here is Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Darren.
Hi.
Not real contemporary, but my mother said at the very, very end of Gone with the Wind in the theaters, there were audible gasps.
Yeah.
It's not dramatic, but back then,
yeah,
didn't say that.
Yeah, no, it's classic. It is as classic an ending as you can get. Yeah, and I was able to actually saw Gone with the Wind in the movie on the big screen, which was really something. because you know, they re-released it a bunch of times, and I got to see it on the big screen, which was really amazing.
All right, have a good day.
Thank you, Jim. All right. 630 area code says 300. I don't remember how 300 ended. Didn't he scream Sparta and kick somebody in the face or something like that?
Pretty close to that.
That's pretty much the only thing I remember about that movie. Is a lot of slow motion, a lot of people getting kicked in the face. And he kicks some guy into a well.
Yeah, and there were a lot of shields. I remember
Sparta. That. And then he kicks a guy in the let's see. Nick, Arlington Road, one word. Wow, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you another one from the same director. The Mothman Prophecies. You ever see the Mothman Prophecies?
No, I have not. It's been on my list to watch.
Well, that's got an unbelievable ending. I mean, seriously, unbelievable ending. My ex-wife, that movie totally freaks her out.
Hmm.
Like, she can be, I mean, it's just, it's to her, it's the scariest movie she's ever seen. I remember, man, she would just freak at the very mention of the movie. She'd be like, So, it's a really terrific movie. Same director as Arlington Road.
Okay.
And it's got that, but the ending of Mothman Prophecies is really amazing. Like, shocking and, like, yeah. That's a scary movie too. The Mothman Prophecies. It's scary, and it's got a killer ending. Let's see, Highlander.
There can only be one.
I don't remember how Highlander ends. I know that there's the Quickening, they did the Highlander 2, the Quickening, but I don't remember how it ends. 630 area code says Jagged Edge. It's got one of them. Surprise thriller endings. And Body Double. I love Body Double. The great Brian De Palma. Let's see. 773 air code says, what about Titanic? Yeah, Titanic. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but the boat sinks. I don't know if anybody... here's Rick on WGN. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Nick, of all the movies ever made, there's no better ending than Casablanca.
Yeah, it's a great ending. It's classic. You're not just saying that because you're not saying that just because your name is Rick, are you?
No. And I have a good, great story about The Sting.
Okay, well, I have to go to the news, Rick. So we're not going to be able to hear that story right now because I have to hit the news, which is coming up right after this. Everybody hang on, 312-981-7200. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. I am your overnight dude here every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Excuse me. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive right here on WGN. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That's coming up in a little bit. We've been talking about movies with great endings. There have been so many of them. We've got a ton of texts coming in. We got some phone calls here. Let's get to those. 312-981-7200. Here's Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how you doing?
All right.
Okay, I got two movies. You know, there's similar. I mean, a lot of people go with horror movies, you know, with a great ending and so on. But these two movies have been a while back. One relates to what's going to happen with the White Sox later on this year, The Field of Dreams. I think that was a great ending on a movie. When you walked out of the movie theater, you're just like, wow, how could that be?
Yeah.
And the second movie was The Titanic. I thought it had an excellent ending also.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, those are great choices. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. Yeah, Field of Dreams, man. I sobbed like a baby at the end of that movie. Every single time I watch Field of Dreams, I've seen Field of Dreams like 900 times, and I never don't sob at the end of Field of Dreams. Hey, Dad, you want to have a catch? Forget it. Gone. Gone. Oh. Man. Here's Harold on WGN. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, what's going on, Nick? A couple of them. I got Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Where he's telling the story and he's, you know, and he's telling them, shop smart, shop that smart.
Right.
Or the other version. Is a pretty cool version, too.
Yeah.
The director's cut. But the other one is, I think you'd appreciate, not necessarily a great movie, but it's got one of those twist endings that, I don't know, I didn't see coming. But, of course, I first saw it when I was like 5 or 6. You know, they had the school auditorium one time. Hook, Line, and Sinker.
Jerry Lewis.
He's on the hospital gurney, and he's telling the doctors, like, you know, how he got. They're like, what happened? How'd you get here? And he's telling the story, and it goes on for two hours while the movie goes on, or an hour and a half. And at the end, well, you go ahead and tell him what happened at the end. Do you remember?
No.
Okay. Well, Hook, Line, and Sinker. He's telling the story, and it keeps going. You know, it's leading through as a movie, and just about the end, he's on a boat. He's hiding from somebody. He's on a boat. And he figured the best way to hide is go out in the middle of the ocean on a boat. He's fishing. So he's got deep sea fishing, and he's got he gets a line on a fish, and he is pulling at he's trying to reel that fish in, and he's pulling and pulling, and a fish is fighting him. And finally the fish, it was a swordfish, jumps out of the water, as they can do, and lands in the boat. And then next thing you know, he's back in the emergency room, and he's telling these doctors, and he finally gets up and he sits up off the gurney, and then you see the long shot. He's got this swordfish through his chest.
Right.
And he gets up and he starts walking around telling them, you know, how the swordfish, you know,
right,
impaled them.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. That's good old Jerry Lewis. You can't go wrong with Jerry Lewis. That's how I'm thinking. So, well, we got a ton of texts here. 317 area code says, how about the end of Animal House? Just a lot of silly fun. Yeah, that's in Animal House, you always find out where everybody, you know, like at the end of the movie, you find out where everybody went in the future. Senator Blutowski.
That's the best one.
That movie... it still holds up. Animal House is just a classic.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so hilarious. Yeah. How about let's not forget Roadhouse, because it's a great movie. Thank you, Nick, for the early morning entertainment. My pleasure. Roadhouse.
I don't know about best ending, but I'll definitely go along with
Roadhouse rules.
Yeah.
I still love the story, and this is it's an old story. I still love the story that every time Roadhouse is on, TV, Bill Murray calls Kelly Lynch's husband every time it's on TV, and lets him know that his wife is having sex with Patrick Swayze. He calls him up every single time it's on. Doesn't matter what time it's on.
Oh, wow.
What that's, channel. That's Bill Murray, man.
That's awesome.
Let's see. Great, amazing endings to me. The Shawshank Redemption and Citizen Kane. The ending of Hellboy 2, when Hellboy becomes father. Not getting to watch Guillermo del Toro's final Hellboy movie with the incredible Ron Perlman will always be a sore spot for me. I remember not liking the original Hellboy, but then liking Hellboy 2. And I wasn't crazy about the version with David Harbour that was just on Netflix. But I thought Hellboy 2 was good. I remember really liking Hellboy 2. Jay says, hi, Nick. The Birds movie ending is cool. Birds everywhere as a car moves away from the house. Yeah, you know, people are not on the fence when it comes to how they feel about the ending of The Birds. Because I know people who hate that ending. I mean, hate it. I think it's cool. I think the ending of The Birds is pretty cool. I always did, even when I was a kid, even when I was a little kid. And I know people can't stand the ending of The Birds. Because it doesn't really have an ending. There's just a bunch of birds, people leaving. Also, I admit to you, I still cry at the end of The Trouble with Angels as Haley Mills and June Harding say good at the train station. All right. 309 area codes, what about surprise endings like The Sixth Sense and The Usual Suspects? Yeah, I don't like either of those movies. I know that I'm alone on that, but I do not like either of those movies. 218 area code says, you want a great movie ending, you can't go wrong with Mother. That poor woman having to deal with all those interlopers painting her house, tearing it apart, having to deal with Michelle Pfeiffer. And how many times can you tell someone to get off your sink? Yeah, that movie, I remember when I saw Mother, I saw it with my folks to see that movie. And if you've not seen this movie, it's an insane movie. It's insane. Darren Aronofsky puts Jennifer Lawrence through the ringer in that movie, and it is maddening. It really is nuts. I remember when if you've seen Mother, then you know how sort of certifiable and insane it is. And when it ended, I remember as soon as it was over, my dad just goes, "Well, that was something." It's like someone watched Children of Men and said, I wonder what this movie would look like if it took place in my home. Children of Men, another movie that has a great ending. Well, it has a great everything. One of my favorite movies of all time. 630 area code says, Eli with Denzel Washington. I never saw that ending coming. I don't remember the ending of Eli.
I think the full title was The Book of Eli.
Book of Eli?
Yeah.
I don't remember it. 773 area code says Diamonds Are Forever with 007 kicking the villain overboard. 301 Dirty Harry. Classic ending. We got The Natural and Field of Dreams. Yeah, I wish I liked The Natural, but I don't. Because it is so different than the book, and I read the book, and it's so different, and the book is so much darker and not corny at all, because the movie is.
Mm-hmm.
But the book is just great, so that's what I have issues with that.
I like the soundtrack. I can go with that.
Yeah, the score is good.
Yeah.
It's a great score. Randy Newman, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Did the score for that.
Yeah.
So. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We got more movies that have great endings. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. So, a little distracted because Cheaters is on one of the TVs in here. And I always remember, of course, one of the faces, you know, the couple of the faces are pixeled out, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And there's people punching each other and yelling and, you know, the usual stuff that you will see on Cheaters. But I remember there was an episode of Cheaters one time where they busted into a hotel room or something. And you know how they pixelate the faces? Well, they pixelated a dog's face.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, I guess the dog didn't sign the release. I don't know. They pixelated a dog's face. That was always one of my favorite things. I don't know. How long has this show been on? How long has Cheaters been on?
Oh, man. Good question.
It's been on forever. And it's every episode is exactly the same. So.
Its first episode date was October 21st, 2000.
So almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not surprising. Yeah. I'm not surprised by that. So we're talking about, the girl that was cheated on is now smashing her boyfriend's guitar. I just thought I would let you know that she's smashing his acoustic guitar. Guy seems very upset that his acoustic guitar just got smashed. So that's what you get, man. You cheat, you get your guitar gets smashed. All right. We're talking about movies with great endings. And let's see. 773, Thelma and Louise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love Thelma and Louise, but there are two things about it that I don't like. I do not like the ending where everything is all, you know, like after they obviously, you know, are going to they drive off the cliff, obviously. So they're going to die, but the original cut that Ridley Scott wanted to do, it was just going to cut right to black. But now the cut that because the studio was like, you can't just end the movie like that. You can't leave people depressed because these two people are dead and you're going to cut to black. So they made him add those scenes of like, hey, didn't we have fun on our trip? You know how at the end of the movie, they show all these clips of them.
Okay.
So they didn't want it to be as bad. So I have an issue with that. And the only other issue that I have with Thelma and Louise is I don't care how good looking Brad Pitt is. A woman who was sexually assaulted 8 hours earlier is not going to jump into bed with the next guy. I don't care how good looking Brad Pitt is. I've always had issues with that. So, but anyway, it's a great movie outside of that, and it does have a cool ending. 815 area code says, "How about the endings to Clue?"
I love Clue.
Well, you know when that movie first came out, there were three endings. There are three endings.
Yep.
And what they did when they released the movie, you could go see some movie theaters were showing ending A, some movie theaters were showing ending B, some movie theaters were showing ending C. So the idea was that you're going to like the movie so much that you're going to go back and see it again, but with a different ending. And that's what they were trying to do. Did not work.
Huh.
That was you know, you had to go to a different theater to see the different endings. But now, of course, all three of them are just. But that's the way it was released. It was released to, you know, they wanted people to see it multiple times.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Huh.
But I will say this: when we saw it, because they screened it for the critics, we got to see all three endings. I just remember. Here's what I love about that movie: Tim Curry rules in that movie.
Oh yeah.
And so is Madeline Kahn. I mean, actually, the whole cast is good, but man, Tim Curry is especially. I mean, he dominates that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I love Tim Curry. He is awesome. All right, here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Morning, Nick. These movies I saw on Family Classics, and otherwise I probably wouldn't even know they existed, but Harvey and Arsenic and Old Lace.
Oh, both classics. Both classics.
And you know, and then one more for you is Midnight Run. So those are a few that probably most of your audience are going, huh? What?
Yeah. Harvey. Everybody knows Harvey. I'm pretty sure everybody knows Harvey. So
All
right, Robert.
Show,
thanks.
Though, mate,
thanks.
Always.
Take care. All right. Midnight Run. That's I've mentioned this before. That's a remote dropper for me. That's it. It doesn't matter what time it's on. Doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter, you know, what part of the movie I'm. I will watch it every single time it's on. I love that movie. It's so good, and the chemistry between De Niro and Charles Grodin is fantastic. They're funny in that movie. How about this? 724 area code says the end of Deliverance still creeps me out, even though you know the hand is coming up. It's a very creepy movie.
Yeah.
815 area code says, good morning, Nick. One of my favorites is also one of the saddest. It's Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. I think we accomplished something. Yeah. Jeff Bridges, man. He's the best.
How many Bridges references have we had so far this
week? Well, not enough.
I feel like
he's my favorite actor.
Yeah.
He's my favorite actor. 773 area code says, the day the earth stood still. The remake.
Yeah, not the Keanu.
No, even though I love Keanu, yeah. But no.
Yeah.
773 area code again votes for The Natural. Another 773 White Heat with Jimmy Cagney, Top of the World Mom. 815 area code says, I love the twist ending in the movie The Others. That's a really good movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nicole Kidman. That's a really creepy movie and a very scary and really beautifully subtle. And that the first time I saw it, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see the twist coming. Mm-hmm. Didn't see it coming at all. Jason says, I love the ending of History of the World Part 1. Mel Brooks again.
Yeah.
Michelle in Geneva said, Some Like It Hot and King of Comedy. Some Like It Hot has Some Like It Hot has one of the best final lines in movie history. Nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's great. And King of Comedy, I'm glad somebody else enjoys that movie. Cuz most people can't stand it. It's just a very uncomfortable movie to watch, King of Comedy. I love it though. I think, and you know, a lot of people try to figure out what's going on in the is the last part of that movie, like the last half hour of that movie, is that all just in De Niro's head? Does he really get on the Langford show? Does he really kill, you know, on the show? 773 Air Coast says the end of Green Berets. Well, I haven't seen Green Berets in years.
Yeah.
630 Area Code says gentlemen prefer blondes. Mm-hmm. 262 area code says, I'm going to say the ending of Defending Your Life was pretty good. Well, yeah. I mean, it goes without saying. Albert Brooks. It's a really beautiful ending, too. It's a very satisfying ending, Defending Your Life. God, that movie's so funny. All of Albert Brooks's movies are great. Just really, really great. He's one of the best. One of the best on the planet. So, all right. We've got a bunch more people who are texting in, and if you guys want to jump in, we're talking about movie endings, very memorable movie endings, and we'll get to more of that. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. My dad's going to call and tell a joke. We've also got a Blackhawks Express coming up for this morning on this Monday morning, okay? And the news is coming up right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we've been talking about movies with great endings, having a lot of fun doing that. Some of them sad, some of them surprising, some of them just cool. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Roger on WGN. Hi, Roger.
Hey, what's going on, Nick?
Hey.
Hey, I watch a lot of movies. So things like Get Out and Jurassic Park, the endings I get mixed up. They're kind of similar. So I'm going to pick a cool ending.
Mm-hmm.
California Split, 1974.
Great movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you go up and down with these two, trying to make their way through different ways of making money, gambling and what have you.
Yeah.
So Siegel gets hot. I mean, it's his last. He burns himself out. Wins the big jackpot, big secret poker game in Reno. And Elliot Gould is waiting around in the casino, just waiting with no money. He's just, you know, loitering, just waiting for Siegel to win.
Yeah.
They finally win all the chips. They fill it a full fruit salad bowl full of chips.
Yeah.
And then Gould starts talking, let's do this, let's do that, let's go to Mexico. And then Siegel says, nah, I'm burnt out.
Yeah.
And then Gould stops and says, it don't mean a blanking thing, does it? And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I haven't seen that one. That's another one I haven't seen in a long time.
Oh, they play it at the Music Box sometimes. It's great to see on a big screen.
It's a classic 70s movie, man.
Oh, yeah. It holds up even now.
Yep. All right, Roger, thank you, sir.
Bye.
See ya. Yeah. All right, how about this one? Collider says, La La Land. I did not expect that movie to end as sadly as it does. Because they don't end up together. I'm not going to ruin it for anybody.
You just ruined it for me, Nick.
Have you not seen La La Land?
No, not yet.
Oh.
But no, you didn't, like, I don't think you like, really ruined it for me. I'm just, yeah.
It's almost 4 years old, so. But yeah, no, it's I did not expect it to end the way it did. And I love that movie. How about the final scene in The Godfather?
Oh yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. They close the door on Diane Keaton's. That's just that final shot is just her with the door closing. Oh man. Yeah. That's a pretty good movie, that Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad.
You know what scene I love at the end of like and I mean this is I'm you know, we talked about Spielberg a little bit earlier on in the show, but end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Just the final, the warehouse?
The final warehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, God, that's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
that's my remote dropper.
Is it Raiders?
Yeah.
The original?
Yeah.
I love Raiders. My favorite, though, is the second one.
The second one?
Temple of Doom is my favorite. I love, they're all, I mean, no, I'm not crazy, but the third one with Sean Connery is okay. Yeah. But that last one was terrible with the
Shia
LaBeouf and the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Yeah. A terrible, terrible movie. 773 area code says, how about the Sting in Toy Story 3? I don't remember what happens at the end of Toy Story 3. I don't remember. Oh, wait a minute. Is that when the toys are given to the...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Tearjerker right there.
The Sting. What a great movie.
I love The Sting.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I remember when it came out and, everybody was just completely startled by it. Like, the whole ending fooled everybody. 765 area code, Avengers Infinity War. It's dark, it's twisted, and I love it. Yeah, I'll tell you something, man. When that Spider-Man kid turns into dust.
Yeah.
Man. Oh, man.
I guess the last one.
The Avengers Final Village or whatever the hell it was called. I don't know.
Endgame.
Endgame, yeah.
Yeah. That one got me.
Did it?
A little bit, yeah. Just with Tony and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't give too much away. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
808 area code, Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
That is such a crazy ending. By the way, the girl who was in Sleepaway Camp, who is in that final shot of the movie where you're like, what? She was at Flashback last year. Flashback
really?
Convention.
Was she? Really?
Yeah. She's really cool. She's nuts, but she's really cool. Glenn and Evanston said Greedy with Kirk Douglas and Michael J. Fox had a hilarious surprise ending. I do not remember the ending of Greedy. Remember seeing it.
Okay.
Nick, two Steve McQueen movies, The Great Escape and Bullet, with McQueen going back to his lonely apartment. 312 area code says Strangers on a Train. Classic. Classic Hitchcock. How about this for an iconic ending? Sunset Boulevard with Gloria Swanson at the very end. So nominated for 11 Academy Awards upon its release in 1950, Sunset Boulevard has the distinction of standing the test of time as a classic film that still holds up incredibly well today. That's true. One of the best. Moreover, while audiences' tastes and trends have evolved, the ending to Billy Wilder's film noir remains tremendously effective. It's the epitome of evergreen. Story of an unsuccessful screenwriter who gets drawn into the secluded home of a forgotten silent film star is packed with tension and heightened emotion. But Wilder tells the audience up front that you're not in for a happy ending. The film begins with our protagonist lying dead in a pool. By the film's end, we emphasize with poor Norma Desmond, played by Gloria Swanson, even as she commits murder. Rendering her final line, all right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up. Not one of delusion or insanity, but tragedy. Yeah, it's a great movie. I love the fact that it's narrated by a dead guy. I really do. That's classic. How about this? Almost Famous is considered a movie with great ending. If Cameron Crowe never made a great film after Almost Famous, he'd still be considered one of the greats. That's how good Almost Famous is. His 2000 semi-autobiographical comedy drama is a genuine masterstroke chronicling the exploits of a teenage journalist on the road with a rock band in the 70s. It covers all of your traditional coming-of-age tropes like young love, sex, and insecurity, albeit against the backdrop of superstardom, fame, and ego. It's the perfect concoction that comes to a tremendous close in Williams, Patrick Fugic, a bedroom, where he's visited by Stillwater standout Russell Hammond, played by Billy Crudup, to finally complete the interview he's been promising. The two have a heart-to-heart and miraculously avoids the saccharin and comes off as intimate while both get a peek of Penny Lane making her way to Morocco. Yeah, that's a great movie. A great movie. All right. Let's see. Here is Rob on WGN. Oh, there's Rob. Hey, Rob.
Yeah. Hey, how about Wild Things?
Ah, yes.
With Neve Campbell and then you've got Bill Murray is the classic shyster lawyer in this thing.
Yeah, it's a great movie and directed by the one and only John McNaughton. It's also a very funny movie. It's terrific. And John McNaughton's John's a good guy, and I've known him for a long time. Lives in Chicago and still makes great movies. But yeah, Wild Things. I remember when Wild Things first opened, people went nuts over the infamous scene between the two ladies. Wild Things got a great ending. It's got 20 endings. That's the thing about Wild Things. It ends like 50 times. The credits are still going at the end, the movie still ends. It keeps ending over and over and over again, twist ending after twist ending after twist ending. I didn't know when to leave the theater. Like, I don't think I can leave the theater. This thing's not going to end for another month. One of my favorite endings in movie history is the last 10 minutes of All That Jazz. With Roy Scheider. One of my favorite endings, I love the musical number at the end of that. It says, the tortured artist has become a Hollywood cliche, but what happens when the tortured artist makes an incredibly self-aware autobiographical biopic? That's Bob Fosse's musical masterpiece, All That Jazz, which lays out the good, the bad, and the ugly of the filmmaker, writer, and choreographer's life via Roy Scheider. As the film comes to a close with Scheider's protagonist on his deathbed, the five stages of grief present themselves as a grand musical finale featuring figures from all throughout his life. It's at once incredibly egotistical, apologetic, gregarious, and beautiful, and it wraps up in a stark closing shot that brings us crashing down to reality. It's truly unforgettable and one of the greatest grand finales of all time. Yes, it is. I agree with that 100%. How about the ending of The Graduate?
Oh, yeah.
Then just kind of sitting there on the bus. Like, what now?
Mm-hmm.
boy, that was a good movie. So, and they mentioned The Sixth Sense, which I believe most people have talked about. And there was that time when, wasn't every movie that Shyamalan was, that he made had to have a big twist ending?
Yeah.
That was like his thing.
Uh-huh.
Remember like Signs and The Village, which
the Village.
Oh my God. Oh, what a terrible movie that was. So, anyway. All right, let's take a break here for some weather, and then when we come back, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, and we've got a Blackhawks Express coming up as well, and then we'll wrap up the show right here on 720 WGN.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey, what'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yeah! Here we go.
Yeah, that's right. Every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke. He's been telling jokes his whole life, so we thought, hey, let's kick off your work week with a joke. And also, the news is next, by the way, from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's coming up. But let's get my dad on here to tell a joke. Hey, Dad.
Hi, Ned.
How are you, buddy?
Doing good.
Good. How's Ma?
Doing good.
All right. You got a joke?
Got a joke. Heard it at the Lightning Room. This woman, Eve, told me the joke.
Okay.
So the... What do you call it when Batman skips church?
What?
Christian Bale.
All right, all right, all right.
there you go.
All right, Nick.
All right, Dad. Thanks, man.
Take care.
See you
bye.
Later. There you go. There's my dad.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
And he'll do it again next week. Yes, Christian Bale. All right, Hawks played last night, and we always play the Express the next morning after the game, so let's hear the Black Sox Express.
Chicago Blackhawks need to be at their best tonight as they take on one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals, who are led by one of the best players in the hockey world, Alex Ovechkin. The Hawks have won two in a row, and if they want to make it three straight, they're going to have to shut down a guy wearing number 8. It's Ovechkin. Down to center ice we go. His first NHL faceoff against one of the best in Nicklas Backstrom. And the drop of the puck, and Doc wins it decidedly to Duncan Keith Hawk line. 5 for 14 in their last four games are the Capitals on the power play to keep those numbers going. So suffice it to say they can score, and oh, she does! He scores! Off of a feed from behind the Hawk net. Yevgeny Kuznetsov fed it up the slot. DJ Oshie was wide open and fired it into the top right corner. The Caps have a 1-0 lead. Gustafson with a pass. Nylander short of the Capitol line. Gave it to Carpenter along the right sideboards. He deflects it into the Capitol zone, then picks up a loose puck, moves in and fires. And a big save. Rebound. Score! Frank Kajula with his second goal in as many games off of a turnover in the Capitol zone. Nylander set him up from the side of the net with a quick backhand flip. He got Holtby out of position, did Nylander, and it's a wide-open Kajula for an easy goal. We're tied at one. Left-point Gustafson moves across the ring for Kane. It bounces over his stick. Haglund the other way, shorthanded over the Hawk line, left wing. Put it down in front. They score! It's Nick Dowd with a shorthanded goal, giving the Washington Capitals a 2-1 lead. Kempe pounds one for the left wing. That's Skip White. Ovechkin now takes a pass from Carlson, shoots and scores. From the left wing circle, Alexander Ovechkin. It takes him not even a millisecond to get that shot away, and he did. And he cleanly beat Crawford. It's now 3-1 in favor of the Cat. Hawks get it back. Side of the left circle. Now side in front. The Kubalik is in the score! Dominic Kubalik with his second goal of the season. Hard work by that line for Saad and Kemp. And Saad produces a loose puck in front of the Capitol net. Kubalik buried it. It's a hockey game again. It's recent Washington. Carpenter chips it up the board. Not out. And then Nylander came along. Pokes it ahead. Kane over the Capitol line. Right circle. Shoot the score! Patrick Kane with a seeing eye shot. It was underneath the blocker of Holtby. And with 10:02 left in the third, we're tied at 3. And the United Center is bedlam. On passing up the left wing at center ice. This was intended for DeBrincat. Picked off by Wilson to Eller on the Hawk line down the right wing. Eller carrying behind the net all the way to the left corner. Sharp angle shot. Save, rebound, score. It's Tom Wilson at the top of the crease. And Wilson deflects this one or put it in behind the Hawk goaltender Corey Crawford. And with 8:13 left in period number three, the Caps reassume the lead at 4-3. 1:02 on the clock, face-off to the right of Holtby. Kane wins it to DeBrincat. To Kane, high slot. To Gustafson in the line, deep slot. To DeBrincat, left point. Flings it down to the left wing corner. Shaw battling there. The puck taken away by Eller. He fires it the length of the ice and into the empty net. He scores. It's an empty net goal. That makes the score 5-3 in favor of the Capitals with now 49 seconds left in the third. Here's Keith between the circles with 5. He'll look up ice. Will he try a desperation attempt? No. He gives it to Seabrook, who will in turn fire one toward the Capitol net. That's turned wide by Holtby.
And the game ends with the Capitals winning 5-3. Shots on goal favoring the Blackhawks for the game, 44-30. The Hawks got away 15 in the third period to 9 for the Capitals. But the Capitals, they control where it really counts, and that's on the scoreboard. 5-3, the final score. They beat the Hawks, and the Hawks' record now 2-3-1. While the Capitals, who are on a 5-game road trip, this was the start of it, they improved their record to 6-2-2.
All right, tough loss for the Hawks, but they're going to play tomorrow at 7:30 against the Golden Knights, and you can hear it right here on 720 WGN, as you can hear every Blackhawks game right here on WGN. Tough loss, but we'll get them back again. Talking about we were talking about movies with great endings, and the Collider article mentions Whiplash, which is I love this movie. Damien Chazelle directed it, Miles Teller, J.K. Simmons, goes without saying how great he is in it. So that's got a really great ending too. Cabin in the Woods, one of the craziest movies of all time. I love Cabin in the Woods. It's a very, 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 very crazy movie, and you really don't know where it's going. One of the most original movies, and I love it. I think it's great. So lots of crazy stuff in that movie, and twists and turns and all that cool stuff. Usual Suspects, everybody is talking about the ending of the Usual Suspects. Empire Strikes Back.
Good choice.
It's you know, it leaves you dangling, but it's the darkest of all the Star Wars movies, and that's everybody's. Doesn't everybody like Empire Strikes Back the most? Isn't that usually the deal that most people like Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, for the most part, I was always a Jedi guy.
No, really,
Return of the Jedi. Yeah, I just liked it because I felt it was the most action packed out of the three.
I can't do the Ewoks, man.
That's understandable.
I can't do the Ewoks.
That was also the only one I saw in theater when it was originally released because of how old I am.
Yeah.
And everything, so.
Yeah.
So that might have influenced it.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
I'm sure. But, Empire is the one I think that that most people will.
Yeah.
I like Rogue One.
Yeah.
That's my favorite of any Star Wars movie. And that's the ending of that movie. Good Lord.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I know it's, you know, like Luke finds out that Darth Vader is his dad. He loses his hand. It's as dark as you can get. Mm-hmm. And Han is in that thing.
The carbonite.
Yeah, the carbonite.
Yep. Yeah.
So I remember seeing it in the theater, and everybody was like, ooh. And then you had to wait 3 years.
Yeah.
Because Jedi didn't come out till 83. And Empire came out in 80. The thing about Star Wars actually is that it was in the theaters, and this doesn't happen anymore. It was in the theaters for over a year. You could see it in a movie theater for over a year, and that just doesn't move. Movies don't last more than 2 weeks in a movie theater now.
Yeah,
but that was in the theaters for over a year. In fact, it was out so long that you could almost see Star Wars on the big screen, and then like about a month later, Empire would open.
Oh, wow.
So that's how it was. All right. Let's take a break here on WGN, and we've got the news coming up at 5, and then the opening bell with Steve Grzanich. And, Ben, thanks again, man.
My pleasure.
Tom will be back tomorrow, and I'll be back tomorrow as well, but let's get to the news right after this.